Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. Pacific on our YouTube channel, ANNZAC. Check out my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. My name is Zach Birchie. I'm joined by Jacob Chapman.
Hey, guys.
We're finally doing it. This is it. It's finally here.
You know, we could have put this off forever, I think, and I would have been satisfied.
All right, Jacob. Joining us for our discussion of the epic 90s, like the easily the most popular, I think, Gundam in America, like in maybe in America. Yeah, I would say so. In America, it's Mobile Suit Gundam Wing. We're joined by Lauren Orsini. My favorite Gundam writer, well, one of my favorite Gundam writers, writes our Gundam writer on the site on Anime News Network, sort of our resident expert. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can also find her work at Otaku Journalist and Gunpla 101. That's your big thing. How many Gundam Wing model kits have you built?
Okay, so I just want to tell you about a very memorable Gundam Wing model I've built. So I got married 5 years ago. And I was going through my wedding presents at the bridal shower, and I opened up a Master Grade Death Scythe from Endless Waltz.
Wow.
You know, the Death Scythe Hell. You know, that's Dual Maxwell's.
Yes, right, yeah.
In Endless Waltz. And I'm like, who the heck got me this? And I don't know, it was a group present from a bunch of my friends. They're like, you can build it with your husband, whose name is Gundam Guy on Twitter.
Oh, there you go.
And that just says something about my lifelong relationship with Gundam Wing.
Okay.
That this was what my friends decided to get me as a wedding present.
Usually in these, when we do these episodes, we sort of go around the table and like, what was your experience with this when it came out, basically? And what we're talking about is a seminal show. Gundam Wing is, in the West anyway, is the Gundam show that most Western fans have had some experience with, largely because it ran in the fucking afternoon on Cartoon Network back in the 90s, and then they ran it late at night in an uncensored version, the Toonami Midnight Run. And that was a big thing for teens back then. And it made a real impact, I think. It was very popular for a time. They actually got model kits in stores and everything, action figures and things. It was a small phenomenon, I would say. It was
a
very
huge
popular
phenomenon, Zach.
There, what's that?
I think it was a huge phenomenon.
A huge phenomenon?
Yeah.
You think
okay,
it was
so
giant?
Just over a week after its premiere on Cartoon Network, and yeah, I'm quoting a wiki here. Right. It was the top rated program on Cartoon Network for all age groups.
Really?
All of them.
All right.
And for the entire summer of 2000, it was either the first or the second top rated show. During all, like, it was airing 12 times a week. So people were not getting bored of it. It was still one of the first, still either the first or second top rated show on Cartoon Network that entire summer.
I hesitated to say a big, because it's not like it took over popular culture. It was modestly popular. It wasn't like enormous. They had some toys in stores, and that's, you know, it wasn't like
the internet didn't exist yet, so like the kids watching Gundam Wing couldn't connect with other kids watching Gundam Wing like that weren't in their school or whatever, so it wasn't able to explode the way certain things are now. But like, yeah, there was definitely a lot of Gundam Wing merchandise
around.
It
was a hit. It was a hit show, but it wasn't, I don't think it hit quite in the same way as like a Dragon Ball or something like that. Maybe close back then, but not.
I wouldn't say close. I would say it's
maybe
on the level of
yeah.
I would say it's on the level of its closest contemporary, which aired the following years, Outlaw Star. And that I knew lots of people who liked it, but it wasn't like Dragon Ball was like a cultural. You would just see kids wearing Dragon Ball shirts, and it was like a thing that you could say, and people wouldn't go, "What's that?" But like, you would tell the average person Gundam Wing or Outlaw Star, they'd be like, "What's that?" They would have to be a nerd in order to understand.
It's formative in the same box as Cowboy Bebop, Outlaw Star. name your others. Name the others. You know, like those were the shows. Those were the original Toonami shows. It was one of them. I mean, Lauren, like maybe your characterization of it is a little bit more accurate. I don't know. My perception of it as the time is like, oh, this is popular. How impressive that they're putting merchandise in stores. That was a big deal for anime, any anime at all at mm-hmm. the time. You know, having any Sailor Moon merchandise in stores was seen as like, wow, this is something, you know, this is going somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was, and to this day, I think like most Western fans, that's their experience with Gundam. They've seen or heard some Gundam Wing. And that's kind of a big deal. I was a teenager when it came out. I didn't have cable at the time. But watched some of it at my anime club and then some on DVD. And, you know, it didn't quite cotton to it. The girls in my circle at the time were a lot more into it. And the male Gundam fans were a little less into it. That was kind of my experience with it. And the boys were bitching that the girls were into it, which was dumb and annoying. And it was an early example of me running into that kind of bullshit and immediately having a bad reaction to it. but that was kind of my earliest experience with it. I wasn't really into giant robot shows, which is at the time in the late 90s. I was like, you know, big, politically complicated mecha show that I need to know a lot to go into. Like, you know, I just didn't really get that much into it. I didn't really become a Gundam fan until later, like considerably later in my life. And then I became a fan by watching the original, the one from the 70s. So my story through Gundam is a little different. But Lauren, what was your first experience? It sounds like you have a very complicated history with Gundam Wing, but start at the beginning, I guess.
Okay, well, all my friends at the time were girls, and we were all super into Gundam Wing as soon as it started airing. I guess someone had seen pictures of what the characters looked like, and we're like, oh, well, we're gonna definitely watch that.
I wonder why.
I had already been familiar with Sailor Moon and a few other shows. I remember it was a really big deal that every girl got to have their own character, and that was their boyfriend. Mine was Duo, because I picked pretty early on.
Sure.
So otherwise, I would have been stuck with like Wufei or something, like my friend who just totally owns it. Even today, yeah. I was just talking to her about this. I'm like, "Do you like Wufei, or do you resent us because you had to pick last and you got to stuck with Wufei?" And she's like, "No, he's very angsty." I related to that at the time. And yeah, at the time, there was no merch. I would go into another universe, and I would get comics of, I think it was Gundam Wing Zero.
Yeah.
And they would have maybe like 10 pages at a time. And I would trace those, and I would hang those around my room. And I would print out fan art I found online, and that's how I would decorate. Because you couldn't get posters.
Yeah, right.
I really wanted a poster of Duo, so I drew one myself.
Nice.
I remember my mom came in when I was just hanging this picture. I drew him shirtless. I was 12. I put angel wings on him. She just walked in. I'm like, "This is Duo." And she just walked out.
Duo Maxwell, huh?
Yeah.
That's the one. Although it was my perception that he was the most popular. Period.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It turns out that he won... in the Anime Grand Prix Award in 1995, he was selected as favorite male anime character of the year.
Didn't those boys dominate those charts for quite some time? Didn't they? Because I know the show wasn't as big in Japan as it was here. Like, it wasn't as popular.
The Seed Boys were on.
The Seed Boys were much bigger than them. Were the Seed Boys bigger than the Wing Boys?
Because
the Seed Boys are not good looking.
Mushoku Gundam Wing was like a modest success in Japan.
Yeah,
but
when
Seed
it came
was
out in 95. However, later it got more popular. Like, it won second place in the Anime Grand Prix Award, in fact.
Really?
Huh. After Neon Genesis Evangelion, of course.
It was Eva 1, Gundam Wing 2?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's...
Can you imagine being
no,
there?
No, I cannot.
I know that Seed sold better and had more cultural penetration in Japan, obviously not in America, but I don't know if that translated into popularity of boys specifically or not.
So, Lauren, did you buy the Bandai Anime Village VHS or like the original DVDs, the Gundam Wing DVDs?
No, but my husband John has them, so okay. I have been able to take a look at them.
Right. Did you collect the show early on, or did you just tape it off Cartoon Network?
I didn't tape it. I would just watch it. Ran it 12 times a week, right. So I didn't have to. By the time they stopped running it a year or so later, I was like, I've had enough Gundam.
Over the years, has your relationship with it changed?
Yeah, there was a time I would have said it was my favorite Gundam, and that's not the case now.
Okay. Do you think that's just because you've grown up or because now your estimation of the show has changed over the years?
Now I've seen so many Gundam shows that it's honestly hard to pick a favorite sometimes.
I would say, like, after now having seen this ridiculous thing, I can totally see why it was fucking massive then, but they've written so much better now. Like, they've made significantly better Gundam than this since then, which is great. But I can totally see why something this fucking bombastic and over the top was so huge back then. Jacob, so you said you just seen a few.
Right. So when I was a kid, I was literally like a child. Usually when I say a kid and I'm talking about discovering anime, I was technically a teenager, but I was a kid when this was on TV. And I was still new to anime and checking stuff out. I was like past my Pokemon phase, still enjoying Digimon and being like, okay, what other stuff is there? So I would watch Toonami when I can get away with it because I wasn't allowed to watch anime and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when my parents were out, I would watch the block or try to put in a blank tape and record whatever happened to be on and catch it. And so I watched a couple episodes of Gundam Wing, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, but I don't understand fully what's going on. And the thing that turned me off, I was about, you have to remember, I was 10 years old at the time, but I was about 4 or 5 episodes in, and they weren't contiguous. They were out of order because it was just whatever day I could happen to catch it. So I was missing stuff, and I was aware I was missing stuff, but I was like, well, I can sort of put it together, and I just like looking at it. I just like the way anime looks. But there was something where it was either Wufei or it was so long ago I don't remember, but it was either Wufei or Hiro did something exceptionally angry or violent. They were just, I don't know, they shouted something or were like really mean or shot somebody or something like that. And I was like, I'm not enjoying this. I don't like these characters. They're just kind of angry and mean and I don't understand what's going on. And it makes me uncomfortable, so I'm not going to watch it anymore. So I did. So I stopped watching it. And then shortly after, I fell in love with Outlaw Star, and that was the one that that I really enjoyed as like a 10, 11, 12 year old. So I just forgot all about it. But basically I tried Gundam Wing when I was 10, decided I did not like it. So that was my experience.
Smash cut to 20 years later. Here you are.
And now I hate it.
Sitting there watching it going like,
what I've watched now, all 49 episodes in proper order in Japanese, the way that they were meant to be watched without them changing the word kill to destroy and stuff like that. And I've watched the film Endless Waltz and it is trash and I hate it.
Really? You hated it?
No, hate is a strong word. It was entertaining.
I don't see how you like it's so.
It's so boring. It's so boring.
All right, Jacob didn't have a good time.
It's so boring. Anyway,
I did.
I will get into
okay,
why.
I want to state this. I had a fucking great time watching Gundam Wing. Mm. I laughed and enjoyed myself and kept up with it and engaged with it the whole way through. I thought it was alternately fascinating and funny and like goofy and over the top, and I did like, I will say that I struggled to engage with it, I think, completely sincerely, because it's so silly and the characters' motivations, like everything happens in service of the plot. The plot is just this train that it's almost like the plot is like a train, and they're like, if this train stops, we all die, so you better keep it going. Like, it's 49 episodes, and there's no fucking time for anything.
There's no time for anything. And well, so I want to say, like, I had a similar experience to you where I was just sort of laughing and shaking my head for the first 25 or 26 episodes. The closest I got to ever sincerely enjoying the show and being like, I care about these characters and I know what the conflict is. Like, I understand they're acting almost like a human, sort of like they're 25% of the way to acting like a human being, was in episodes like 24, 25, Quatra's whole schlemiel, like his whole deal, which was bad. It was bad for him because it made him look bad and it was a dumb decision, but I still understood it and I understood what was at stake and why people were fighting. And I enjoyed any time Relena was on screen because she's pretty entertaining. But apart from that, like, after episode 25, it was boring. It wasn't like, wow, that's pretty wacky. It was like, I'm so bored. So I think that's where it peaked.
Well, Lauren, what? How do you regard the show now?
I'm just so glad, Zach, that you got how funny it is.
It's hilarious. I think a lot of people
think this is a serious show, and definitely the first time I watched it as a kid, I thought it was very adult.
Right? Yeah.
That's why it was so incomprehensible. But it is actually very goofy. There's a lot of good lines.
Yeah, there's a lot of really funny lines. But to the point, I'm not entirely certain that it's intentional. I mean, I was laughing out loud at the sheer fact that, like, the way this thing is plotted out, like this freight train moving at 400 miles an hour, because they have to fill all this space with, they've chosen to fill space with soap opera plot twists instead of just average anime filler, like more fights. I mean, it's more fights, but, like, in order to get to those fights, they go through these crazy fucking plot twists that you would think would take several episodes to resolve. But instead, they resolve in, like, a minute. It's over in the next minute or two. Like, someone launches a harebrained scheme. You're like, oh, geez, this is going to take a couple episodes. It doesn't. It resolves itself in the next minute, and it was all for, like, a minute's worth of distraction or something. Like, crazy, crazy plot shit happening.
And that is a thing that I do respect about Gundam Wing, and that I think more anime could stand to do if they're going to be you're going to have five episodes of plot stretched out over 26, which some shows certainly do. I do. Code Geass did this too. It's a good idea in general, but what Gundam Wing did was, like, when you have one plot point that actually matters per episode, instead of, I think most anime would pad out the rest of the time with antics or comedy or just, like, place setting, or I don't know, just atmosphere, something like that. And if I don't care, if I don't care about the characters because they aren't well written, as is the case with Gundam Wing, then you should fill that time not with any of that boring stuff, but with tiny circles of B plot that are just resolved within themselves. Basically, things that are false tension. It's a soap opera. It's like, you know, this person came down with a massive heart attack. Let's go visit them in the hospital or whatever. It's like, all right, glad that's over. And, oh, no, you just found out that your uncle has run away with your niece or whatever. Like, and that's a soap opera. Obviously, not Gundam Wing. In the case of Gundam Wing, it's let's attack this base. It's this guy has switched sides. No, never mind, he hasn't. It's all stuff that doesn't actually matter in the grand scheme of things. But the thing that matters is, like, the one plot point per episode that they do get out. But nothing leading up to that is boring or feels like it's wasting your time, because it is, in fact, totally wasting your time. But it's wasting your time with things that are, like, high action and high tension and people yelling and stuff like that. So, you know, I think more anime could stand to do that. I don't think it made Gundam Wing better, but it did make it less boring for most of its runs, or half of its run. So,
yeah. You know, Jake, I have a theory for why it's like that.
Uh-huh.
Because it sounds like the director and the scriptwriter were not on the same page. I was at the Otakon panel where they were talking about this, and Sumizawa was there. He's the scriptwriter. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, I would submit a script and it would come back for revisions. And, like, the whole other half was crushed out and it says Gundam self-destructs. So he goes to the director. He's like, wait, you just said Gundam self-destructs. Is there anything leading up to this? And he's like, yeah, don't worry. We'll just figure it out. And I mean, that's obviously paraphrasing. I don't.
Yeah, no.
Gundam self-destructed a lot.
I talked to Sumisawa about this too, and he relayed that story, which is basically like, well, I had one idea, they had other ideas, and he quit halfway through the show. And the fact of the matter is, the screenwriter quits. That writing style is perfectly intact. Like, you can barely tell he's not there anymore.
Well, he wrote the last
because the overwhelming crazy shit is happening in every single episode still. Like, it is obvious which side won the war on this one. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it feels to me anyway. Because that element, that, like, let's put in these absolutely bug nuts B-plots in every episode.
Troa has amnesia.
Yeah. All right. We have not even started going through the fucking plot of Gundam Wing yet, and it is a beast, so we better get started. All right, Gundam Wing. Here is what happens in the television series Gundam Wing. God damn. Just saying that out loud makes me feel, like, intimidated. All right.
Start giggling, yeah.
I think the important thing to get right is the faction. So, in the beginning, there's a thing called Operation Meteor. There are colonies in space, and there's Earth. I'm just going to try and make this as simple as possible. Earth is ruled over by the Earth Alliance and their military organization, Oz. They oppress the space colonies. There's something called Operation Meteor, wherein five Gundams, each carrying an angst-ridden boy with a questionable personality, drops onto the Earth. One of them has an asshole in it named Hiro Yui, who, for some reason... Now, these are spies, right? They're going to... infiltrate the Earth Alliance, or at least that's the motivation given at the beginning.
In those flashy mobile suits.
They're going to infiltrate Earth in these giant fuck-off death machines that are painted up like graphics cards. Like, you know, secretive. So they infiltrate, they get down there, and for some reason, Hero enrolls in school. Lauren, I was really hoping you could answer this question. Why does he bother trying to integrate into society at all?
Don't look at me for that.
Oh, you don't know the answer to that? Why does it happen? I am so weirded out by the fact that he enrolls in school and does a bunch of stuff. Cause so, like, all the characters in this are constantly doing shit that's just, like, I'm a badass.
They're trying to give good messages.
He's a student, you, viewer.
Yeah, they're trying to give good messages to the children, and you should stay in school no matter what you do.
But that's crazy that he's in school.
Stay in school, kids.
He's, like, going out and blowing up these enormous military installations, and they're chasing him around. Get that Gundam pilot, and then he's back in school.
And then he's, like, doing cool slam dunks over all the seniors on the basketball court.
Yeah, he's delivering the monster dunk.
That's, like, a time-honored Gundam tradition. Like, in order to show that Shar Aznable was cool, they have him doing slam dunks.
Yeah, it's a callback. It is a callback, but it is still jarring. Anyway, he goes to school. The other pilots also get jobs. So there's five pilots. There's Hero Yui, who's an angry asshole. His motivation is, Lauren, what would you say Hero's motivation is at the beginning of the show?
He's a very conflicted, possibly abused person.
Right.
He had a real rough childhood. Now what he understands is that he's got missions, and the mission is the most important thing.
That's the only thing that matters. Also,
so don't worry about the future. Just try to finish the mission.
And he has a dogma. Do what your emotions tell you to do. Act impulsively on your emotions at all times.
It's a good mantra to follow for a soldier at the head of a very dangerous infiltration mission where you have to stay low key. Follow your anger at all times.
Yes. So that's Hero. Then there's Duo, who's kind of softer, right? He's like a nice guy. It's just that he's also the god of death, and that's kind of his lone motivating character trait.
He's a good head of hair.
He's a nice guy with nice hair. He's got a good haircut. But he really, for some reason, feels particularly compelled to refer to himself as the god of death and murder as many people at once in battle. But that's kind of it.
In the censored version of the dub, he's like, I'm the destroyer. Yeah, so I was, like, really confused when the internet did happen, and I was going to fan sites about Duo, and I'm like, what's this god of death stuff?
Yeah, right.
Well, totally. It does look like a scythe.
Does he not? I didn't watch the censored version, obviously. Does he not refer to himself as the god of destruction?
I mean, like, the great destroyer.
Oh, okay.
There's also no blood.
No blood, no mention of God, yeah.
Yeah, so when Hero falls out of his mobile suit after pressing the button, I'm like, huh, what happened there?
So there's Quatre.
He's lying down.
Right.
Sleeping.
So there's also Quatre. He's the blonde one. He's gentle and empathetic and comes from a family of pacifists, a rich family of pacifists.
He has 28 sisters, only one of whom is a clone on Mars.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Just trying to help.
I appreciate it. No. Look, you have no idea how much I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Anyway. That's Quatre has kind of a thing for Troa. He's largely seen as the glue, you know? He's the glue that keeps the team together. Characters openly say, like, he's the one keeping them all together.
Because he has no feelings, you see.
But he...
Because he has... There's nothing going on in there.
They keep saying that, but he's clearly the character that feels the most.
Like, is he?
He feels, yeah, he has feelings for Troa. He's constantly chasing people down, saying, like, we can't do this.
No, I'm talking about Troa.
Oh, I'm talking about
Troa. Has no feelings.
Troa has no feelings. Quatre has lots of feelings.
Yes, Quatre has many feelings.
Yes. Quatre has lots of feelings. Maybe I got the names mixed up there for a second. Anyway, so that's Quatre. And then there's Troa, who is a ridiculous, stoic motherfucker who, according to his backstory is even more weird and confusing, but, like, he's a circus performer, or decides to be a circus performer.
For some reason.
To prove to the world that he doesn't fear anything, I think. That's kind of his character. And then there's Wufei. And Wufei's character motivation is, I have to murder everyone who is fighting.
Yeah, I have to stop the fighting by being the strongest, yes. So no one else will fight because I'm stronger than them and they know not to fight because then I'll kill them.
Yes.
You know what? Wufei is trash. However, I understand his motivation better than anyone else's motivation in this because it never changes. It's very consistent. It is that and only that, even if that doesn't make any sense. So I will give props to Wufei because I understand him throughout the entire.
Well, I mean, that's his motivation, but it changes. Like, it's not that his motivation changes, but he changes his mind about it over and over and over again.
Well, he gets sad that he's not strong enough, but that's it.
Towards the end of the show, he's like, no, I'm going to fight, I guess. He says, there's a whole episode where he's like, I'm not going to fight anymore, and then fights a bunch of guys, and then yells, I'm not going to fight anymore, and then fights a bunch more guys. I don't hate this show. I really fucking hated Wufei.
See, I can't hate him because he makes more sense than half the other guys, even if it's a dumb philosophy. Like, what he's saying is, I don't want to fight anymore, and if other people fight, they're forcing me to fight, and I'm mad.
That's stupid. That's what he's saying. That's so dumb.
But everybody's stupid.
That's the most typical Gundam motivation.
Oh, is it?
Like, yeah. Every Gundam stars someone who's like, oh, I don't want to fight, but I'm stupid strong, and you guys are making me fight.
Yeah, well, right. So I'm like, so I get it. Here. I understand.
Well, but Wufei is specifically the two sides are fighting, and then a third faction shows up and says, no, all fighting is bad, and kills everyone. That's not a thing that, like, really happens in real wars really often.
That's not a thing that happens in real wars. It should be the subtitle of Gundam Wing.
Well, it's all philosophical, but that's the thing about Wufei. It's just like, this is something that doesn't make... This is so dumb and weird.
But everybody's dumb and weird. At least he's consistent.
Wufei's just yelling and screaming and showing up only when they need him to distract something from happening.
Like, I mean, I should clarify. I don't like Wufei. I'm just saying, like, he's the only one that makes any sense. Even his motivation makes no sense to a human, but that's true of everybody in the show. His motivation is consistent with itself.
Glory to Losers, which is a great, you know, subhead for anything Gundam Wing related.
Right, they're all losers.
It's like, why is Wufei so screwed up? Why is Ketra so screwed up? And so on.
Well, it's not so like. The concept, I feel like we'll get to this whole losers thing. It's a thematic thing that happens a little later. But that is something I want to discuss in a bit. But before we do that, Wufei does have a really great scene in the beginning with these hyenas where he runs.
To clarify, you mean literal. You don't mean hoodlums. You mean literally
I mean literal hyenas where he's struggling and fighting and he runs out in the middle of the forest and they're like surrounding him like it's going to be a fight. And then he screams like, ah! And they all run away in terror because Wufei is such a badass. The show is just full of little moments like that. So all of this is heading towards something where Trays, who let me get all the factions right. There's the Gundam Boys. The Gundam Boys are kind of their own, are basically their own faction. There's the Alliance, which is holding on to Earth. Let me finish. Don't interrupt. Let me finish. Let me get through the whole thing. If you interrupt me, I will lose my place. Please just let me finish. The Alliance is keeping shit together on Earth. They are about to get couped by their own military. So it's a military coup that happens. But Trays, who is leading up the military coup, tricks Hero into attacking the Alliance and frames them as dangerous rebels. And so now we have to take over. Now my military authoritarian coup is finished. I'm taking over the Earth. And now it's time to shore up anti-Oz sentiment around the world and attack any nation that won't accept our rule. That's kind of what's happening. It's an authoritarian coup that is worldwide, it seems like. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the first major political plot point, the first major turning point in the show. And all this time, just like dumb, crazy thing after dumb, crazy thing. So there's a character named Lady Une, right? Now, she is a fascist enforcer. She is Trays' enforcer. She is the person who is murdering his enemies and fighting all of his fights and doing
she
all
does
that
the
shit.
Dirty work.
She does the dirty work. She is tasked with assassinating the father of Relena Peacecraft, who is
the best character in the show.
Some would say the best character in the show.
Many would say.
Dedicated to pacifism.
That's the worst thing about her.
Yeah, absolutely dedicated to pacifism. Her father is also dedicated to pacifism. They're kind of trying to keep their shit together. It's the only place that where peace reigns supreme. So Trace's enforcer, Lady... Is it... I'm sorry. Is Lady Une or...
Une.
Lady Un.
It's Lady Un?
Yeah, that's why I always thought. Lady Un.
Un.
It's right. Pronounced different ways in English and Japanese right. Is the problem.
Anyway. The assassination plot goes like this. She has a makeup kit... And she's looking at it, and everything she says is always like, like, she's cackling and, like, declaring what she's, like, hinting at her evil plans, like, oh, but they'll never know. Like, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, she's looking into her compact, sets the bomb, sets it as a bomb, leaves it on a table out in front of Relena's dad's meeting room, leaves. Relena comes out. It's like, oh, someone left their makeup here. This must belong to Lady Une. Runs out inside, says, hey, you forgot this. And she's like, whoa, grabs it, fucking spikes it back in through the window. The exact window where her father is, like, perfect aim, sails in through the window, blows him the fuck up.
Look, she's a highly trained soldier. She has to be ready for these circumstances.
No one involved says anything to anyone. There's no photographs, there's no memory, none of the other soldiers around say anything about any of this.
Well, they're in on it.
It is totally key. It's
dumb.
Like this crazy cartoon. I was laughing so much at that scene. But now Relena is suddenly taken with this mission of, now I have to stand up for total pacifism.
Right.
Which is, even when you are... Your throat is in the middle of being cut. You say, no, I won't fight if you can choke it out. That's
right,
basically Relena's position.
I mean, she has a moment before she commits to that, right after she's dealing with the fallout from her father's death, where she's hanging out with, I think, her granddad. I think it's her granddad, but it's and Lady Un shows up at the party to meet over something important, and she just pulls out a gun and almost shoots her. So that's before she's... So she went from that to ultimate pacifism.
Yeah, pretty quick.
Within about two episodes, because things move insanely fast in Gundam.
Yeah, which at first I was like, this just seems like they were just like, oh, fuck it, let's just go for it. But it just seems like that's the pacing of the show. Like, they're like, no, we have to move this fast. We have to do this. It has to, like...
Yeah, if they don't move that fast, you'll start questioning, wait, why wasn't anyone taking photos in the compact bomb scene?
Or, like, why wouldn't anyone at all notice that or say anything about it? Relena doesn't even say anything about it. anyway, it's yeah. Okay, so, moving on. After that, then we're out in space for a while. Let's see.
Oh, well, the important thing that Relena learns from her father's death is that she was adopted, and she's actually the last living princess of the Peacecraft Kingdom, and her brother is like Trey's or whatever.
No,
I just want to clarify this, because her dad, as he lays dying, like, she's like, father, wake up, you know, don't die. And he wakes up and he's like, oh, before I go, I have to tell you that you didn't come from my nuts. You came from someone else's anyway. Bye. Like, that's he just wanted to say that right before he died. Like, and then he's gone. Like, that's really important to him that he share that information. It's the show is extremely silly, is my point.
Yeah. Well, and to that point. The show is extremely silly in this instance, as now Troa has joined the circus as a knife thrower's assistant, presumably to prove that he doesn't fear death or doesn't give a fuck or something like that. But his the knife thrower, Catherine, that's her name, right? Cuts him. She cuts him, and she's like, you're supposed to dodge. And he goes, I'm not getting paid to dodge. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? And then the episode ends.
Yeah. I'm not paid to dodge. It's like, well, you are being paid to, like, stop this fascist takeover by not losing an eye to a random lady at the circus who throws knives at you. You're being paid not to do that.
Yeah. So they're still on Earth.
She's not a random lady.
That's true. She's not a random lady...
She's not involved with the military, is she? Maybe I missed that.
She's
I don't know.
Sister.
It's literal. I thought that was just like...
I thought that's just what they called
Yeah,
her.
I thought that's what she called, like, that's
no,
my
that's
brother.
Literal. They are literally
that's
siblings.
Literally a sister.
When was you need more drama, make them related.
I feel like I missed that. I know she calls him brother in Endless Waltz,
But I think it's from the prequel manga, and that's how you find out for
Yeah,
sure.
I didn't read that. So.
It's never, hard to, no, he just calls her Nae-san because, you know.
I thought it was just like a we know each other thing.
No, they are siblings.
Okay.
Like, man, what are the odds?
That's why he joins the circus, then.
Is that why he showed up there?
You know, Lauren, it feels like this is information that it would have been helpful for them to have put in the show.
It would have been nice if they had any character development in the show.
There isn't any time.
There's no time.
There's time for character development. We just take out all these B-plots.
We have to... Look, there's no time because 10 minutes of every episode has to be pew-pew robots pew-pew. Getting exploded.
Right.
That's...
I mean, that's where the money comes from. Right.
But not on this show.
It's all in the robot toys.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. I would be curious to know the percentage of robot toys versus character goods sold on Gundam Wing. That's what I want to know. Yeah. Are they selling cam badges of Hero, or are they selling cam badges of Wing Zero? Maybe both.
Yeah, we'd have to have Japanese sources to figure that one out, because, you know, they had so few things. I remember a friend made me a pin with Duel on it.
Oh, that's
good.
This
is why we originally had fan art, because we didn't have official art.
Handmade merchandise, man. That was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had some of that. I made some stuff.
I think, if I had to guess, I would say they prioritized sales of and marketing the robots, because there was no character development for these boys, and the number of robots they went through was quite insane. They went through three, four bots each, just blowing them up, getting a new one, blowing it up, getting a new one.
They kept self-destructing.
Not blowing it up. It's expensive, and it takes, 9 years to make.
Okay, here's my question for you, Lauren. Why does Hero blow himself up in episode 10 of this show? The Gundam boys have been framed. Well, not really framed. They did actually murder all of the Alliance people. They just did it on accident. They didn't mean to. So
they've
now
been
they're
scapegoated.
Yeah, they're being scapegoated. But they just go right back to school on Earth and then start blowing shit up right next to the school and then just go back to school right afterward. This is where it really stretched my fucking, why are you in school thing? Because they're playing basketball next to school. They see an Oz base out in the fucking bay. And Hero and Duo are like, let's go blow it up. So they do. And then they just come back to school afterward. And it's like, wouldn't Oz at some point fucking know? The two dudes that are doing this are in that school right there? Like, they just never notice.
Yeah, and remember how surprised Zex is that Hero is a child?
Yeah.
It's just so shocking to them that an angsty young teen could be a mobile suit pilot. They never saw Gundam or Zeta Gundam or any of that.
Well, I mean, no, of course they didn't. But, I guess they're surprised that he's so young, but I never understood how they're able to just blend into society after, world-ending military damage being hunted by the world-conquering military organization.
It's not like there's that many boys running around with a braid down to their ass.
He's also registered in the school under the name Hero Yui.
Yeah, well, the other one.
Which is the name of a famous colonial liberator.
Mm-hmm.
So, what the fuck?
This George Washington fellow seems like he's on the up and up.
Anyway, so that happens. This is also around the time where Zex, who is the char of the show, whose sole role seems to be, he's doing that Principal Skinner thing, no, it's the children who are wrong. Am I so out of touch? He goes to the fight, sees, what? But these people aren't acting chivalrous? That's his reaction to most things in the, first third of the show? But these people aren't behaving with chivalry? But he gets a robot called Talgeese, which I thought was actually a really cool idea. Talgeese is kind of an antiquated Gundam that requires an extremely strong pilot to basically agree to a suicide mission, which is kind of the nature of the Gundams to begin with. But this one in particular is kind of a... I like the idea of an old machine that is massively powerful, provided you have the right operator. Potentially just as powerful as modern stuff, but the way to operate this machine has largely been lost or whatever.
Doesn't this sound very familiar to something?
It does. Yes.
A very recent Gundam.
Yes, it does.
Fire-blooded orphans.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, but it's a cool idea. I thought it was very cool, and I really liked the way they executed it in this show. I actually thought the Talgeese stuff was good. So I don't understand in episode 10 why he blows himself up. And, like, most of the show, I'm saying, like, I don't understand why this character did this thing. But that one I really didn't get, and I actually went back and watched it again. They're cornered in space, right? So Oz corners them in space. Dr. J, who is the person who built the Gundam and, like, assigned Hero to it, or trained him to pilot it, says, "We'll surrender, but I'm not giving you the Gundams." He says this to Oz. Says this to Trace, basically. "We will surrender. The colonies will surrender, but I'm not giving you the Gundams." Then Hero blows his own Gundam up, but he's not, like, destroying anything. The enemy doesn't turn around and leave. It doesn't change anything. Why does he do that?
I do understand this. So okay. He thought that it was destroying the Gundam so that they couldn't use it. What he didn't know was that Zex and his crew at Oz had some antiquated Gundam tech that they could use to combine with whatever's left of this to make. So he thought he was doing his mission.
You'll never take it.
Yeah, you'll never take it. And they're like, "Well, actually, we will.
In the moment, I was like, is this... did they just want this to happen so they could redesign it and put out a new toy? I mean, like, but
that is
like,
why the Gundam blows up, like, all 20 times that it blows up in this show. Well, the next more important thing that I remember happening is that Troa sort of goes the "if you can't lick 'em, join 'em" route, because they don't have an alliance anymore with the colonies. So he joins Oz, and this puts Duo out of sorts. Like, several people, like, exit and enter the story because now they don't have a fight anymore. They can't just defend the colonies, and it's fine. They can't liberate the colonies. It's fine because the colonies are now in alliance with Trace, or Trace's superior. I'm not entirely sure I remember. However, the point is that when Quatre decides to go, Quatre is the only one who seems to be happy about this because he's like, "Oh, I don't have to fight." Everybody else is like, "My only life is as a soldier, and so I'll find somewhere else to soldier, whether it's with Oz or just whether it's just to fight for no fucking reason." But Quatre's like, "I'm just gonna go home. Peace out, guys. I'm gonna visit my family." And wouldn't you know it, the time he decides to go visit his family, his dad gets killed for some reason that's related to the colonies being absorbed into the Alliance or some shit like that. So, the next important thing I remember happening is Quatre responding poorly to this and getting absorbed into his Gundam's will to fight. Because the big thing, and the thing that I thought was most interesting that was kind of squandered by the show, is that the Gundams have sentience to some degree. They're self-aware, but they don't have, like, minds of their own. They're just, like, they're like a mirror. They, like, reflect their pilot's emotions and instincts and stuff well enough in AI that they can reflect it back to them in order to help them fight. And sometimes this drives the pilots a little crazy because it makes them, like, it makes their brains solely focused on combat, and that's it. So that's what happens to Quatre, and he's, like, the first person this happens to in a long list of people this happens to through the rest of the show. So he decides that the only thing that he can do to stop the colonies from being compromised and more innocent lives being lost is to blow them all up, which doesn't make any sense, but he's crazy at this point. So that's the last thing I remember that shifts the show majorly, is that Quatre goes nuts and tries to destroy the colonies.
It feels like any time the show isn't sure what to do, they're borrowing from the Gundam canon. Yeah. Like, when you're saying that everyone's kind of going crazy, they kind of see it as, like in the Japanese dub, at least, Kedra calls it something like the heart of outer space.
Yeah.
And I think it's supposed to be something like a new type ability. Like, that's these people have gotten ESP from piloting Gundams.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's in a lot of Gundam shows.
Yeah,
it makes zero sense here and kind of comes out of thin air. But I really think that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, right. They wouldn't commit to the new type thing in this show. Mm-hmm. They really wouldn't. They kept hinting at it like that, but they wouldn't commit to it.
Well, the closest that they commit to it is in externalizing it through the Zero program, which is just, like, basically it's giving the intimate relationship that one has with the Gundam that uses the AI to reflect your killing instinct on back to you or whatever. Like, it's basically giving it to any old buddy, so even if you've never piloted it before, you just get in and fuck shit up. And if you're already a pilot, it's really gonna fuck you up, but that comes later.
Yeah,
but yeah, well, they don't have, like, special humans in this. It's all normal.
No, there
people.
Are special humans.
Oh, there are?
Hero is... Hero is a new type, right?
They never call that.
I looked, because I did some research, and was like, he was listed as a new type. Maybe that was a fan, like, fans had decided or something.
He has the abilities that a new type would have, but yeah. I don't know if he's, like, officially a new type, because it I don't know if new types exist in the Gundam Wing universe.
Well, it's not a UC show, right? Universe. So, yeah.
They just say they're all really good drivers, and that the longer you pilot a Gundam, the more it can, like, infect your brain.
Yeah.
That's all I know. I don't know. Gundam Wing doesn't make any sense.
Well, getting to the point where Quattro's dad gets killed and he comes back to start just trying to destroy the colonies in Mad Revenge is a good place. That's about the middle of the show. But before, there is one thing I need to run back to. Before we do that, though, I don't want to pass this by because I think it's my favorite little microcosm in the series where I think this is, it's like, look, you want to talk about Gundam Wing, you got to talk about this. Here's Troa's plan. Oz just happens to like the circus. So they bring in the circus onto one of their colonies. Troba's like, a plan. I've got a plan. Goes back into the circus.
Gets a really big brown blanket.
Gets a really, really big tarp. Like, a really big tarp. They shuffle the audience in for the circus. They pull the blanket off of what is basically the deadliest possible weapon that the people in the audience are familiar with in the middle of a war zone that they know is targeting Oz. Everyone involved knows that these Gundams are coming to kill Oz. They're in the middle of an Oz installation. Troa pulls the blanket off and just starts fucking firing.
Yeah.
Blows the whole thing up. Everyone runs away and screaming. Then, okay, so they win the battle and everything. And then Troa... he's like, well, my work here is done. Starts walking away, and the ringmaster says, there goes the... He could have been the best circus performer to ever live. There goes a legend.
He stood still while knives were thrown at him, and then he used you to get onto a base to blow shit up.
He got...
Didn't even turn the tide of the war, and then he left.
Okay, that doesn't help.
He got stabbed and blew up your circus. And you're... there goes the greatest... fucking amazing. Man, I love this show. That made me... I had to pause. I was burst into laughter. So we move on over this time. You know, it's revealed that Zix and Relena are related. There's some interesting, like, what-the-fuck moments where... I had a real favorite where they're testing out the artificial intelligence, the robot dolls. They're testing them out on the field
of
battle.
That's my favorite.
you can take this one then.
Okay, so I feel like this is kind of a microcosm of how confusing everybody's motivations are in this show because I don't understand how this began, middle, or ended. I could tell you what happened, but not why. So I don't remember his name. Do you know the name of the commander? He's important later, but like
it starts with a T. It's like a Russian name. Lauren, do you remember?
Tabarov?
No.
It's like Tabarov.
I'm going to say Tabarov, and if it's wrong, whatever. So he's really – he's the developer. He's the later going to be much more powerful in the army who's like, look, we could have pilots pilot these things, or we could just make robots with the AI from this because obviously, as evidenced by the Gundams and how these other things work, like they have their own AI. You can just sort of like develop that instead of developing pilots and then, hey, less loss of life. So he's like, these robot dolls is what they're called, are so superior to having mobile suits run around. And then suddenly Trays, who is his superior at this time? Won't always be, but is this commanding officer, basically. Shows up in a mobile suit without revealing himself, just in a mobile suit. And he's like, what's this mobile suit doing here? It must be a spy. Kill it, my robot dolls. And so they start firing on him. And Trace pops on his visualizer and he's like, oh my God, it's my commander. I almost killed you. That would have been bad. Anyway, and Trace like, if these things were worth a damn, they would have killed me. Obviously they're not. And you should stop this operation. Like, this is a dumb plan and we should have people pilot these things instead of your dumb robots. And this guy, and his response is, well, fuck you then. Kill him. So he commands his robot dolls to actually kill the commander who happened to show up. Like, I don't know why this is happening. Anyway, so that happens, and everybody in the room, because this guy just committed fucking treason or broke the chain of command or whatever, turns their guns on him. Like, duh, of course they're gonna do that. And he's like, what? You know, kill Trays. And they're like, no, we're not gonna do that. What the fuck? And Trays, over the visualizer, says... have some compassion and put people in the death pods.
Hey, try a little love.
Try a little love. Put some people in these instead of, like, what a soulless thing to do, make death machines without risking human life. Peace out. That's Gundam Wing to me. That's everything about Gundam Wing to me, because I don't understand how it began, middle, or end.
There's definitely a fan theory that Zex and Trace have been working together.
I read that.
And continue to work together just throughout everything.
Yeah, the whole thing was a dumb galaxy brain plan to murder millions of people in the fucking hope that we shouldn't murder each other anymore. Look at all the people who died. That's their fucking plan.
I don't think that that's how Trace feels at all. I think Trace is committed to...
Well, that's Zex's plan at the end.
Yes, that's Zex's plan.
Stupid ass.
But I don't think that's how Trace feels. I think he's being completely honest when he says, like, look, the point of war is that you feel a loss of life. That basically, if you fight wars with robots, then...
Yeah, he's a fucking sociopath.
Yeah, he's a bad person.
Who thinks that the point of life is murder because it's the only thing that gives you, like, meaning.
Yes.
It's fucking disgusting.
Yes, but I'm saying I understand it. I understand his motive. Much like Wufei, he's a terrible person, but... None of the good people in this, I understand their motivations, so at least I understand two of the terrible people. I guess
no,
I understand.
Do you remember
Relena.
That conversation with Wufei and Trace when Wufei's like, do you know how many people have died?
Yes, that's fantastic.
99,336 or whatever.
Yeah.
Wufei wasn't expecting him to have an answer.
Wufei just used
He's like, exactly 99,300.
Which also seems like a really low body count for this show, considering just the nonstop, like, no main characters die, which is weird.
Yeah, you say that. Like, that's another, the big problem that I had with Gundam Wing is it's all about, like, oh, the atrocity of war, like most Gundam
Sacrifice.
Things are. But nothing important, we don't lose anything important. It's kind of like, this was a criticism of the Star Wars prequels as well, is that, there's a Red Letter Media thing, is like, oh, this is the worst war the Republic has ever faced, and it's just... And it's just pristine cities and people standing on their balconies and, like, it doesn't feel like there's any cost, a human cost to this, and no important characters die, and it doesn't feel like we've lost, like, freedoms. There's no long food lines or anything weird that, like, you know, that would feel like you had peace and then you lost it. And that's very true of Gundam Wing. We don't ever see the cost of any of this. We just say there are casualties. We see bases get blown up. We see robots.
Plenty of people's parents who were on screen for at least a minute died.
Yeah, that's a good
I don't
point.
Even remember, but I don't. But there isn't the yeah. No main characters die except Trace by the end, by the very end, and like even Lady Un somehow she gets shot halfway through the show.
Both of them survive.
Yeah, well she gets yeah. There's two of
remember
her.
Remember when she developed
well,
a split
and Zex technically dies. I mean, you see how. Like, Noin won't put flowers on his grave because she's like, oh, he's there. He's there.
Well, he's still alive at the end of Endless Waltz.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's playing space.
I have to talk about Lady Un because we talked about her ridiculous compact mirror bomb thing. We talked about, like, how ridiculous she is. But we didn't talk about, she's such a war dog that part of her job is to convince, I don't remember what they're called, but it's like patrons. Basically, it's patrons of nations that are agreeing to support Oz's military something for some sort of whatever. And she's supposed to be the diplomat to them, so she has to tell them that this is all about maintaining peace. She has to be the propaganda monger, right? So she changes her appearance, she takes her hair down, she takes her glasses off, and she's like, this is all about peace, this is all about peace. And in one of the dumbest things, writing choices, within an episode or two of doing this, she believes it and she develops a split personality because I don't know how that works. She develops a split personality that really believes this is all about peace, who gets confused when she sees the truth behind the propaganda and has to switch back to her war dog personality. And then she dies. But then she comes back at the very end. She comes back in a coma and is able to like save Trey's sanity. Because he took hers away by giving her a split personality because he made her the propaganda monger of his war machine.
I love that scene where split personality Lady Un goes in and Troa's just like, have you considered maybe you're the bad guy? And she's like, what? And like
she's
grabs
like,
her head.
Peace.
Like her eyes pop out of her head and she starts screaming. That shit was hilarious.
And she holds up her glasses and she's like, who am I?
Yeah.
When I put on the glasses, I think he's right or
maybe.
Whatever.
We're the bad guys? Like, she had never considered it.
I don't know where this train has gone off the rails.
It has. Well, no, you got to a good point. You got to a good place with Quatre and his dad. That's a good. That's like 20 something.
That's 25. Like, it's halfway 20s. Through. It's the last time I cared. It was like the drug. What's that scene in Berserk where Griffith? He's like, what was that? And that somebody was like, that was the last tear you shed. And it's like, that was the last fuck I gave for Gundam Wing was episode 25.
Well,
and
another. So, there it goes. Well, tears are another. I want to say how many incredible scenes there are in the show where laugh out loud lines about someone talking about their fucking tears. My favorite was when Troa sees like crystals floating in space and he looks up and he's like, oh, they're my tears. It's fucking amazing.
It's after he blows up Death Side.
It's after he blows up Duo's Gundam. Mm-hmm. Those are my tears. It's fucking amazing. Anyway, before we get, you were 25, but I just wanted to point out another favorite scene. Hero enrolls in college. Because of course he does. The episode ends with this long, another fucking like galaxy brain political monologue about how we think we're so good here on Earth, but when we sent man to the stars, well, now they're just making weapons too. Don't you know? It's just all terrible. And then the professor says, like, hey, this isn't appropriate for your fucking greeting speech.
Yeah.
Like, he gets up there and he's like, don't you know? The world is a fuck. And we just asked you to tell people what your fucking name was.
It's perfect comedy because the way it's introduced, we don't know. The way it's introduced is just narration. It's just here. So we think it's non-diegetic, like outside the show narration, like we're going into a brief recap or something like that. We don't know that this is happening in universe. And then it pans through all this montage and then ends up on Hero's face. And we're like, oh, he's actually saying this in universe to somebody. And then it pulls out and he's at his fucking orientation. And it's like, it's the perfect, like, rim shot, bromtish. Like,
yeah, amazing.
Like, what?
And I can't tell if it's supposed to be a joke or not. That's the thing that kills
it's
me.
It's clearly not. I'm going to say it's absolutely not supposed to be a joke, which is why it's so funny.
What do you think, Lauren? Is that supposed to be funny?
I don't think it's supposed to be funny, but I think it's become really funny the more I watch it.
The next episode has another really funny scene in it. I swear we're going to get to this, but I really want to know, like, Lauren, what you thought of this. There's a scene where Lady Un is trying to decide what they're going to do with, is it Duo that gets captured? They capture Duo. And she's like, if he's ugly, let him live. If people can sympathize with him, kill him. And the soldier's like, if he's ugly, we should let him live? And she goes, ha ha ha, just kidding. And then it just cuts to something else. What? Like, what is that? I don't know.
It's the most entertaining aspect of Gundam Wing.
Is that
dialogue.
Shit? Is just that shit.
But because beyond that, you have like I feel like we're playing up how hilarious the show is. But beyond that, it is really quite dull.
No, it's not. I think my you're perspective. Wrong. I think
well,
you're wrong.
I'm going to speak for anybody who might feel differently. And I think that the show is extremely boring when it is not making me laugh my ass off. But that's why I said perhaps too hyperbolically at the beginning, like, oh, I hate this show. I don't hate it. I just I couldn't find anything. It's one of those things that's bad, meaning the absence of good, not like actively bad. Like, oh, this has the potential to be good, and then just nothing good happens. Was my experience with Gundam Wing. I was either laughing at it or I was bored. So that was my issue with it.
Also, right before Quatre, his father kicks the bucket. Lady Un devises an ingenious plan to take all of her biggest enemies and the people with the greatest reason to kill her and everything she stands for and puts them in her most powerful weapons over and over and over again. And all of the pilots are constantly brought in and placed inside the weapons that they will eventually use. And I don't get why she keeps doing this and keeps saying like, oh, well, and people will say, they'll stand around and say, this seems like a really stupid plan. They'll say it. And she'll be like, yeah, well, I think it'll be fine. Like that, and that's how the dialogue is written. And it's one of the reasons I never thought it was dull or laughed the whole way through is because it's all like that. It's like, well, I came up with a plan, everyone. That seems like a really terrible idea. Yeah, well, we're going to do it anyway. And then they do it and it doesn't really work out. But it's all played totally straight. I don't know. I just thought it was fucking hilarious. I wasn't bored by it at all, like even for a minute.
Yeah, well, and I think it works also that all this stuff is especially funny because there is no comic relief in this show. There's no deliberate jokes. I mean, like, maybe there's one or two, but, like, it doesn't have, like, moments of levity. It doesn't ever give itself moments of levity. It is serious all the way through. So when the seriousness does not work, which is quite often, like, even if you've never seen Gundam Wing, you've probably seen the meme, the thing that was passed around. It's from the very first episode of, you know, Relena invites Hiro to her birthday party. He rips up the birthday invitation, says, "I'll kill you," leaves. And she says, "Who is he?" And you think, with context, perhaps it makes sense. But it does not. No context helps you whatsoever. That is exactly how it plays out in the show, and you don't have anything else to help you understand why that would happen. So I think the fact that there's no deliberate comic relief in the show makes the need to laugh much stronger with all the weird stuff that happens is serious.
I don't know, but I think the reason that I don't find it boring and that I think the melodrama makes more sense is because it's – okay, so you have to understand nobody really has a motive. Nobody really has any self-preservation. But what they do have is a lot of similarity to other characters in the Gundam universe, and the events have a lot of similarity to in other Gundam shows. Like, a colony is going to drop at some point.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to have to do a dangerous entry into Earth's atmosphere. These are all things that happen in Gundam series, and you're just waiting for them to happen. You could just check them off. And so if you're, like, a hardcore Gundam fan, you are always seeing things. You're like, ah, I recognize that.
Yeah, but like that made for a deeply confusing show if you're watching it like out of that context, because that's literally just like disambiguated things images you recognize from Gundam, mm-hmm. just kind of superimposed onto a story that also is just kind of remixing those elements without dedicating itself to, no, I'm going to tell a new story with this stuff.
It's also not how
when I was a kid, I didn't understand it. Right. I thought it was it must be too grown up for me.
Yeah, no, that's not it.
So it turns out.
It wasn't until I watched more Gundam that I understood it.
But what do you think do you think that's successful then as a narrative? If it's literally just like.
I gave it a C when I rewatched it right. this December, because, I mean, I obviously have those nostalgia glasses. Gundam Wing has been a big part of my life. Maybe the most important Gundam show to me, even if it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to call it a good show, and it's difficult to come up with a comeback when you're like, I didn't like it.
Well,
it's hard.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make itself easy to love.
But the thing is, though, I do find myself sitting here saying, I would absolutely recommend this. As, like, you want to get into Gundam? Well, this thing is, like, wildly over the top and entertaining. You will laugh and have a bombastic good time. Yeah, I think you should.
I totally disagree. Right, I would
well,
not
well,
recommend
Well, we're
this
not
to
through the show yet, okay. So this feels like a sort of end of the show kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. But let's try and get through the rest of this. Quatra comes back. He's like, I'm going to fuck all of you up because my dad's dead. It takes almost no time at all to convince him to change his mind, because that is what happens in this. Everyone is fucking mindlessly dedicated to their sort of poorly considered principles until someone says, have you considered something else? And then they change their mind completely and decide to do something else. That happens a lot in Gundam Wing, because it has to, because the plot has to move that quick. Normally, you wouldn't have a character who's like, I don't even know what I'm fighting for. I'll never fight again. And someone says, hey, we need to kill this guy. Well, all right. Looks like I'm back in it. That happens constantly.
Back in the saddle.
That happens constantly in this show. And like a lot of it is idolizing that ridiculous kind of lonely soldier attitude. It's very Metal Gear, you know, like the bandana wrapped around a combat knife that's stuck in the dirt, you know, that kind of thing. It's really hepped up on that attitude. And so, you know, given that it pushes that stuff to the forefront, I don't know, it's a little confusing. But so anyway, we're moving on. Lady Un finally gets hers. She gets shot, but it mostly just takes her out of the show for a really long time. Like, she's obviously not dead. It's one of those shots where, and this is also a Gundam thing, two characters standing in an empty room with low light. One has a gun. There's a shot. It's a line right through their body. It's a still shot. Lauren, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Then the character falls forward, you know, that single line for the bullet. So that's what she gets. So then the show decides to change gears, and now we're going to be about soldiers versus robots and how
Which episode are we at about?
26.
Okay. Ish. I was trying to figure out if we can, like, time this with one director leaving and the other one starting.
This is just before the backstory episodes that got turned into recaps. So right before that. That's 27 and 28, I believe, right?
I think so. Yeah, because 29 is when the next director starts.
Yeah, so 26 is kind of the last full story episode with the original director. And then it goes into two recaps, which are just, I think it's Relena's perspective and then Trace's perspective, and they just recap stuff. And there's like little tidbits of motivation in there that it's not really all that interesting. But the last thing to really get introduced into the show seems to be the Zero, by the original director, is the Zero system. Like, this system will connect you to your Gundam, and you will lose all your inhibitions as a warrior when you go into battle. So now you're going to just scream and fuck everything up even more. It's also supposed to put you on the same level as a robot. So here's the thematic conflict. If this machine, if you can't fight anymore, because robots will always be your, you know, superiors in combat, but this machine will revoke your humanity and turn you into a killing machine, is it worth it? I think from Gundam Wing's perspective, the answer is no. From Treza's perspective, this is some sort of, you know, baseline betrayal of the purpose of humanity. Like, he thinks mankind is just meant to kill itself all the time, and that's the purpose. That's the fucking point. You know, the meaning of life is combat.
He has the thing that Wu. That's why he and Wu Fei are supposedly the same person or whatever. Is that he's like, you deserve to live if you're the strongest, if you fought for it.
Yeah, basically. It's just bullshit.
Yeah, well, social, yeah, but Darwinism. Look, yeah. I'm going to point out that it is consistent.
Yeah, sure.
I understand what this person is about, because I don't understand what the good guys are about half the time in the show.
So that introduces kind of the next major thematic conflict, which is robots versus people. And, like, I really had a hard time getting into this conflict because the person representing the humanity side of it is literally arguing that the point, no, I just don't think we should fight with proxies. Like, that's it. It's just, no, we should be murdering each other. If we do it with proxies, it takes God out of the question. That's fucking awful. So there's no one to root for, right? There's no one to root for. The pacifists are all assholes too. And not only that, but their version of pacifism is a total fucking straw man.
Yeah.
It's a complete straw man. And like, at this, so at this point, we're also, Relena has taken up her role as the leader of the Sank Kingdom, S-A-N-C, which I'm pretty sure is short for sanctimonious, by the way. Fairly certain.
So I like Relena. My big issue, she doesn't go in the folder with, like, the characters whose motivations make sense or are consistent, because I don't know why she's so about peace. Like, this was not her family until her dad died, and then she just looks into it. So I don't know why this is so important to her. However, setting that aside, like, accepting that we don't know why she cares about pacifism or hero as much as she does, the way that she navigates that motive, once we accept that that is her motivation, is very entertaining and very likable, I thought. Like, I think her motive is dumb. Like, I don't think, oh, absolute pacifism makes any sense, that she's, like, letting every Tom, Dick, and Jane who's obviously trying to manipulate her into her life, including, like, Dorothy, who is just evil Relena.
Evil Relena, yeah.
And so I think that that's dumb, but I'm like, hey, they saddled her with that. She can't help that. As far as in the moment what she does, she is a total badass. She's very entertaining. She doesn't take shit from anybody. Even when she's completely cornered, she doesn't take shit from anybody. She's, like, the most powerful queen in the world of, the new alliance that's run under the guy who replaced Treza. She's the queen of that for, like, two episodes, and then it's like, oh, thank God, I don't have to be the queen of this anymore. I don't have to be manipulated. It passes off to somebody else who they then fight. But, like, I don't know. She's just totally in control of herself at all times, and even if it's not, it doesn't make for a realistic character. It's so much fun to watch that, oh, man, my favorite moment with her is actually where she's taken to that donor meeting that I was talking about, like the heads of state of various colonies, or I don't know what it is. It's people that can give Treza money is the point. And Treza goes up there and he's talking about how, like, he's doing all of this in pursuit of peace and, like, it's the natural something, all of his bullshit, basically. And then he gets down and everybody applauds. And Relena is there in disguise. She's not, nobody knows that it's her. She's not really supposed to be there. But Treza's girlfriend brought her there to show her just how hard it's going to be to change these people's minds. And she's like, as you can see, there's nothing you can do about it. So let's leave. And she turns around and Relena is gone. Relena has run up to the stage, taken the mic, and is shouting into it, "This is bullshit and he's wrong and you're all wrong." And I was just laughing my ass off because it's like, and nothing comes of this because that's how Gundam Wing works. Like this incredibly weird, dramatic thing happens out of nowhere, but nothing really comes of it. But I was just like, the stones on this lady to just like, she's, you know, she might be in danger. She's here in disguise. Treza is could have her secretly killed if she really gets in his way. And she doesn't care. She just goes up on stage and fucking yells her pacifism to these guys. I don't know. It's pretty fun.
I'm so glad you like her because I love Relena so much.
She's great. The best character in the show. And
when I was younger, I hated her. It was kind of a thing in the fandom.
It is. It was. Well, that's just like, look, that's. I want to say that that's kind of garden variety, like a girl in a boy's show people hate.
A girl.
I didn't like her. I thought she was like too sentimental. But I mean, I feel like now she's really the only optimist. Optimist in a show full of nihilists, and she's the only person who experiences any growth. Because she goes from, I don't know, like tailing after Hero to, like you say, like becoming this confident head of state.
Well, her perspective meaningfully changes, and I think, like, as a political narrative, Relena's is the only one that makes any kind of sense, basically. Yeah, like, here is a leader, and her storyline is actually really similar to Poe Dameron in The Last Jedi, where it's like, you're learning how to be a leader, and you're having your political ideas challenged, and then in the end, she comes to a more moderate stance. Like, by the end of Endless Waltz, she's like, no, you do have to defend the peace that you worked so hard to... You have to fight to keep your peace. Like, you have to fight for that. That's an arc. She changed her beliefs, and it was based on her experiences. So when you say Relena is the best character in the show, I think she might actually be the only character. Like,
and she still doesn't completely make sense. Yeah. She still doesn't make sense.
I hate to say this, but she's
close.
She's a trope in Gundam. She's very similar to Lacus Klein in Gundam Seed, and she's very similar to Cadelia in Iron-Blooded Orphans. The idea of this lady politician who is changed through her proximity to Gundam pilots is just, it's a thing. Yeah, so they had a blueprint. I mean, obviously not Cadelia, but...
And she looks great in the...
Maybe the first. Nah, who was first?
Well, would you characterize those as being the... So I've only seen maybe 10 episodes of Gundam Seed and... What was the other one you listed?
Orphans.
Orphans I've only seen...
Where else do you have, like...
A bit... But would you say that in those shows, those characters are also the only particularly strong, like, you can actually draw a line through the series for this character that makes sense, and, like, you can, you know, like, it's a solid character you can understand? That's probably not true for, like, Iron-Blooded Orphans.
No, Iron-Blooded Orphans has, like, a bunch of characters that have, like, arcs and stuff.
Yeah. But this is just, like, this is just, like, casserole. Weird. Yeah, this is, like, archetypes who have to fight screaming at each other, and in the middle of it is Relena.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels
and
like.
She's like, you're all morons, but I'm dumb too, so therefore, like, poor Relena, she's not very bright, she just cares a lot, and she doesn't take no guff from anybody, and she looks great in everything that she wears, and, you know, she ends the show on a high note, because she, the last scene in the whole show is, like, Hero trying to, I don't know why he would do this, but he leaves her a teddy bear and a note.
So weird. Because
he's supposed to be in love with her.
Hero, I don't understand you. He leaves her a teddy bear and a note, and she grabs the note, and in front of him, rips it up, just like he did with the birthday invitation at the end. And she said, if you want to say something to me, say it to my face. And I'm like, yes! You know, like, she's not a complete character, but she's closer than most everybody else in the show. So Relena is absolutely the highlight of
Gundam. Well, for most of the show, at least for a lot of this middle section in the 30s here, she's just fighting with evil Relena, which is Dorothy, who is, again, I want to like the character, but then she does shit like, hey, we're sending your worst enemy, the people who are literally just trying to fucking knock your kingdom down, are going to send an envoy to hang out with you all the time. Oh, okay. Sounds
and she's
good.
Like, and she's like, she's a nice girl, Dorothy. And I'm like, no, she's not.
Yeah, no, she shows up as immediately a fucking bloodthirsty sociopath and constantly talking about, like, interrupting her in the middle of class and like, no, actually, war is good.
Yeah, she literally says war is good. And Relena says, well, that's nice that you're willing to listen to me.
Yeah.
She's like, she's clearly
she
not.
She just tolerates it. Anyway, they keep having this fucking zero system that immediately turns everyone who gets into it into a murderous, uncontrollable killing machine.
Yeah.
And then they put all these unstable ass, like, nihilist assholes in it. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. Like, I love how they throw Wufei into it. They just throw him in there. Go get in the robot. Oh, that one will show you your fucking future. That one will, that one will kill you so hard it'll almost show you your future. Like, they're junkies or something.
Yeah.
I was yelling at the screen, like, don't put him in that. Don't put that guy in that machine. Don't do it. But
he doesn't
Hero,
need the help.
Hero spends the entire time like, it's fine. God damn it.
Well, he kills Trace, so, you know.
Yeah. So, people kind of flip around. So the 30s are kind of their own thing, and then at the end of the 30s, there's another realignment. Throughout most of this, what we're dealing with is Oz versus... So Oz has conquered the Alliance. Now it's Oz versus the colonies and Oz versus the Sank Kingdom, right? In the last part of the show, the colonies have started their own formal rebellion called White Fang. Well, not really started their own formal rebellion. It's kind of sort of led by Zex at this point, who's up in space, and he is going to start the war to end all wars with Earth. And this is the setup for the final battle. The Gundams are kind of at this point. We have all these factions again. We haven't even mentioned these people yet because they're sort of just synonymous with Oz. But there's the Romafeller organization.
Right.
Which are
so that's just
fascists.
I couldn't remember his name. It's the guy who takes over Oz after they give Trace the big boot for not wanting to use robots.
Yeah. Oz was the military organization that performed the coup. Mm-hmm. They were being sort of funded by or controlled by Romafeller, which is the organization that has all this peace through domination attitude. We are going to dominate everybody, dictate everything, and our military adventures will we will have a cycle of peace and military adventures.
They're a more
domination.
Basically, they're fascism in a way that makes more sense than Trace's, which was like this weirdly philosophical thing that's like not really how it works.
Trace was the glory of death in battle.
Yeah,
and that's a death cult. Romafeller is a little bit more standard issue fascism.
Yes.
At the end of this, it's Romafeller versus White Fang. And the idea, at least Zex's idea, his plan is, I'm going to smash this fucking, I'm going to take this giant cannon that we built that looks like the ship from the video game Xevious and fire the cannon at Earth. And now I'm going to take the cannon there and fuck up Earth really, really, really badly. And then people will realize that we shouldn't fight each other anymore. That's the plan. So, honestly, I thought the last 10 episodes of this show, that is where I really started losing it.
And that's really the plot of Char's counterattack, where he's like, I'm just going to destroy Earth, and that will bring peace.
Well, that was like Endless Waltz is kind of the Char's counterattack, right? Like, well, it's kind of the same thing. Like, no, they bring a colony, and they're going to drop it on the Earth.
Well, yeah, but aside from that, if Zex is the Char character, like, I agree. I think Lauren's kind of latched onto something here where, like, I don't understand why Zex is trying. I understand why Char is trying to blow up Earth. I don't understand why Zex is trying to blow up Earth.
They both wear masks.
Yes, but I think that's what they did. They were just like, look, we have to parallel this. But his logic is weird because he's like, Earth is where all of this violence started, and if I annihilate this, then we will be forced to come together.
Yeah.
What's left will be forced to come together. And I'm like, you do realize that most weapons manufacturing is currently happening in the colonies now, right? Right.
Well, it's not so much that. It's that this is Zek's fucking logic. This is his fucking logic. Mankind started manufacturing weapons on Earth and killing each other. So we went out. We went out and populated the stars. So now the Earth people have come up to the colonies and made it so that now we are manufacturing weapons. And so that means I have to destroy Earth. The problem is Earth. And it's like, dude, you have identified the wrong common denominator between all of these things. The problem is the species, my man. That is the problem. Which is weird to me. It's so weird that that wound up being his plan in the end, because I feel like Zex himself said several times, isn't it our destiny, like mankind? It's the problem is humanity. It's not
because Char Earth. Wanted to blow up Earth and we need a big that's battle that fucking, puts everything on the
that's
line.
That's frustrating.
Yes.
It's not a
Gundam
reason.
Gundam Wing is frustrating.
It's not a reason for something to happen in a show, in a narrative.
Gundam
like
Wing,
that?
Colon, that's not a reason for something to happen in a narrative. That's the show. The whole thing. You're just, like, the first half is fun. No, the first half is full of this, too. It's just funnier.
Maybe it's just funnier. But
it's funnier.
And in this period, I feel like there's way more of this, like, sudden motivational change. So, and stupid-ass plans. So, the Rumfeller Duke dipshit, or whatever his name is.
Dermot.
Thank you. He takes, their plan is, we're going to blow up the Sank Kingdom, take their leader, claim that the plan all along was to make her the head of our organization instead. This dude's plan is to take his biggest political enemy, whose ideas he considers to be completely dangerous, put her over himself, not understanding that she's massively popular among his entire constituency and half of his fucking boardroom. Mm-hmm. She'll overthrow him fucking immediately. Does he not fucking understand what soft power is?
He thinks he's going to be the puppet master behind the strings because he's holding her peaceful nation hostage. That's
he
what
didn't
he
do any like asking around, hey, how do you guys feel about disarmament? Oh, well, we wouldn't do that under any circumstances. Is that what they said? Or they're like, I don't know. Because they were immediately, all she said, we should disarm. And they're like, yeah, good point.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I love that part of the show because at first it seems like a perfect plan that's using her pacifism against her. Because it's like, oh, we're going to blow up your country. And it's like, well, we can't fight back. And it's like, so I will turn myself in. And they're like, yeah, that's what we wanted to do. Now you're going to be our spokesperson and you're going to do the work of Lady Un now that she's dead and convince everybody that this is a peaceful, our war machine is actually in the interest of peace. And she's like, okay. But I'm your superior? And he's like, yeah, that's the only way it's going to make any sense. Okay, but you do what we say or we'll blow up your country. Okay, is this now broadcasting to millions of people? Okay, I think we should disarm. Millions of people cheer. Why did you say that? We didn't want you to say that. It's too late now, cat's out of the bag. You're not queen anymore, thank God. Well, the end.
My point was in the first part, the people who run the organization,
all of them
were immediately, mm-hmm. yes, let's disarm.
Yeah, but this is after she's already broadcasted as well. So she comes back and he's like going to read her the riot act, but all of the other people in the boardroom agree with her as well. So he's really shit out of
it. It just doesn't make any sense that if they were that close to being cool with disarmament, mm-hmm. that he would have let her get anywhere near that kind of power. Like, it is the stupidest political blunder mm-hmm. I have seen in one of these shows. Like, authoritarians are usually, like, the big thing with authoritarians is they have a terrible time estimating the actual ability of their enemy because they're constantly overinflating it or denigrating it. It's one of these two things. It's hyperbole on either side, which is why they have a hard time fighting their enemy on equal terms. They're either putting too much in it or too little. Like, that's typically the problem with authoritarian armies. Like, this dude... So that's the way that they're stupid. But this dude's like straight up hands his power over to his biggest fucking enemy and mm-hmm. like apparently didn't do any research before that.
Yeah.
Did not know
just,
how
he just
ready,
assumed he
how
would be
ready
able
his
to...
entire population and his entire fucking government was mm-hmm. for immediate disarmament at the first suggestion.
It makes no sense whatsoever, but it makes Relena look great, so I'm fine with it because everything in the show makes no
sense.
So anything that makes her look good is
fine. An entire room full of war profiteers and plutocrats
doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, sure.
No, it makes no sense whatsoever, but it makes me happy. It makes me happy for the character I like, so because I don't have any fucking stock in this plot that makes
all
no sense.
All right, Jacob.
What?
He's so...
But the show doesn't make any sense. All I'm not right. being controversial.
That's the thing, I don't have
really shocking to everyone that Relena would be able to convince the populace that disarmament was a real great idea. And I remember at this time, this was when Hiro was trying to assassinate her. Again.
Right,
but everyone's like, yeah, that's awesome. And he's like, you know, actually, it's fine.
He goes back and forth on killing her a few times. Yeah. Anyway, so end of the show. Hiro pulls it out at the last minute, wouldn't you know. Stops the Peace Million, which at this point has been rammed into the Libra, which is the giant cannon that they're using. this giant thing is going to slam into the earth. Hero blows it up at the last second. The end. One of the last lines is, and then everybody came together to join to make one nation.
Yeah, just what? What?
And I thought the ending was I thought the ending was really simplistic after all that.
They said, I remember the scriptwriter was saying that he thought it ended too suddenly, and that's part of what inspired him to write Frozen Teardrop.
Which,
you know,
so
about
I didn't get
going to Mars and their children who all have the same names as them fighting.
Yeah, I want you to tell us about Frozen Teardrop because I didn't get a chance to look at it.
Oh,
I want
Frozen
you to tell
Teardrop
us
is such a trip.
Well, before you do that, let's do Endless Waltz really quick. So Endless Waltz is a, I thought, really good-looking series of OVA.
Oh, I love Endless Waltz. The mobile suits are incredible because they have a new designer, Hajime Katoki, and people love Katoki's design so much that Gunpla, even from they're not from Gundam Wing, are redesigned by Katoki all the time, and they sell them for more than they sell other Gunpla for under the name Version Ka. So basically, you know, Gundam's supposed to be very realistic, as Jacob has caught on, you know, Gundam Wing, supposed to be super realistic, like what a real war would be. And naturally, the weapons are also supposed to look like real weapons. Right? Right? Mm-hmm. You still follow?
Yes.
Yeah, but then Katoki was like, no, actually, these should be like wild, super-looking robots. And so he completely redesigned, like, Wing Zero with angel wings and, like, actual feathers and...
Yeah, it's a good design.
And that's why they're so dramatically different in Endless Waltz.
Right. Yeah, they look really, really good. The whole thing looks good. Like, the characters are redesigned just a little bit. Like, it's a really nicely animated thing. But it is also just like, oh no, another fact, like, Trace shows up again in the form of, hey, this is an illegitimate daughter that he had.
This is Zeta Gundam. This is Minerva Zabi, and that's pretty much who Maramea is.
Right. But she shows up, and she's like, I'm taking Earth back. And the Gundam pilots are like, no, you're not. The end.
Yep. And now there really aren't any more wars,
so
they say 20 times.
They
to
blow
make
up
sure
all their Gundams
know.
For the millionth time
at the
end.
They put them into the
end of
the sun! I love that.
They do. Well, no, at the end of...
they send them off into the sun, and they're like, wait, we gotta go get them back.
Yeah,
somebody's trying to take Earth.
Yeah, they don't actually go that way. I was kind of hoping that they would. But instead, they just blow them up like a mile out of town.
Let's launch everything into the sun.
Well, they just blow them up like a mile out of town. The city's like right there. Well, isn't this supposed to be like this? They blow up three of them at once, like a mile out of town.
I thought it was really funny, actually, that the movie starts with, like, so long, and they do, like, this perfect, like, beautiful send-off of sending their Gundams into the sun, and it's like, somebody's trying to conquer Earth, and it's like, shit, we gotta go get those.
Yeah.
I think there's time, Quattro, you go get them. That was pretty funny. It's played very seriously, but it's like, because everything in this thing is played seriously, but it's like, it's kind of a wacky situation you set up there. You gotta get those corpses before they burn up.
Hero spends 49 episodes, blowing up every building he sees and then sees one dead puppy and is like, I can't fight anymore.
Yeah.
We have to stop fighting now.
Oh, well, no, what's that great that flashback where she's the little girl sees him sitting in the park? Excuse me, are you lost? I've been lost since the day I was born.
Yeah, that's great. Do you need directions? Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to hear your fucking life story.
Yeah. So, yeah, Endless Waltz, super good animation. The story I thought was like, oh, more of this. I was glad that they kind of wrapped up Relena's political narrative, so to speak. But other than that, you know, it was nice to see it better animated, but, and it feels like something you have to watch. But like, if you want to get the whole story, but, it is, you know, it's a movie wrap up, that I think actually works just fine. It's just,
I think constraining them to a movie did wonderful things because, you know, every single episode of Gundam Wing, a million things are happening. You don't know what's important and what's not. But with the movie, they don't have as much time, so they stick to stuff that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's tighter scripted. Yeah, overall, like, I thought the Endless Waltz experience was better than the TV show. Like, this is tighter scripted. I understand what's happening. It's, you know, it's still Gundam Wing, but, like, it's just a tighter production.
Great music.
Good music, good animation. Like, it's a tighter production overall. It's one of those things where it's like, this is the movie version, and we've really polished it up and made it look great. But tell us about Frozen Teardrop. What is it, and what's in it?
Okay, well, if we're talking about the little movie that came with the box set, that's just 16 minutes, and it's kind of a what do they call it, where it's just pictures on the screen and some voice acting. It's that. And really, after... Okay, so after Gundam Wing was finished, the scriptwriter was like, you know, I wish there had been a lot more. So he went on to create Frozen Teardrop, which is like his big ol' lengthy fan fiction of completely unbelievable stuff that even today Gundam fans are like, is this canon? This can't be canon. Mm. Like stuff like, well, now Hiro and Relina are still there, but everyone else's kid is still there. Like Troa has a kid named Troa Phobos. I have no idea why he did that. Ketra has his female clone, Catherine Odd Winner, who is basically Ketra. Same outfit, same hairstyle, and glasses. They even use the same voice actor.
But it's a girl.
Yeah, but it's a girl now. Oh, it's, okay. It's a clone.
All right.
It's a really important plot point that Ketra is the only son out of 29 children or whatever, 30 kids.
So that's what happens? Everyone just has babies?
Yeah, and now the babies are fighting, but now they're on Mars, too.
Oh, that doesn't sound very good.
No.
Is it just more of the same, like factions fighting over Mars now, but it's the babies, Gundam babies?
Yeah, like, and Relina still looks young, and Hiro still looks young. I don't know how...
They're like, I've had children at age 15.
Well, again, like, we don't know what Hiro's superpowers are. Like, he has them. We don't know what they are. I figured he was, because he spends the first half of the show, like, throwing himself down, like, 40-story chutes and stuff and off of cliffs. Why did I open my parachute? Like, why didn't your bones all break? I guess you're super powered.
Yeah, I like the.
No, you remember whenever he breaks a bone, he can just set it back.
Yeah,
in the
like, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Like right after Duo picks him up, and he's like, "All right, well, I know you can't. You won't be able to walk for like 2 weeks, so we're gonna." And then Hiro just sets his bone back into place, and then he's like, "All right, I'm ready to pilot.
I'm a soldier.
Oh God,
what does a soldier feel?" What does he want?
Nothing interesting.
Who cares? all right, so that's Frozen Teardrop. Sounds like kind of a letdown. So in the end, Jacob, I feel like you've said...
said a lot of things.
You don't like Gundam Wing.
No, I don't.
I do.
I wouldn't recommend
I have a
it.
Real soft spot for it. Mm. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because, like, I always felt like I didn't... I always had a little bit of a thing with Gundam because it's like, am I not into this because I don't like fantasy politics? Am I not into this because it's too slow? Like as a teenager and everything, like how come I can't get into Gundam? Got a little older, was able to get into it. And like now that I get it and I've seen enough Gundam now, Lauren's, you know, you're the expert. I flirt with Gundam. I really love it as a franchise, but I've really only seen maybe... I feel like at most a third of what there is out there to see. And
that's
not,
still a lot.
Well, and that's probably I would say maybe closer to 25% of what's actually out there. You know, I've seen a bit of almost everything, but actually sitting down and watching the whole thing and making sure I can get my brain around it, well, that's another matter entirely. But this one is like popular. The show, I think it's endearing. I think it's charming. I don't think it's like insulting or I think the biggest distinction here is I was not bored at all, like at all, the whole time. And Jacob, you were, and I think that's probably a big part of it. But I really liked the fantasy politics and kind of laughing at what they were pulling from and situations they were pulling from and like what real world stuff they were drawing from. And does this have any real world parallels at all? Like, what are they actually talking about here? What is the philosophy they're trying to get across? Because like, I like trying to understand exactly what the author's view is. Like, what does he think? And the show gives you like a million different loose ends to pull. And I think that's fun to try and put it together. And there's also a sensation with Gundam where it is complicated, but once you figure it out, it only takes a few episodes to kind of figure out all the factions and exactly who's who and what's what. Once you have it figured out, if someone stopped you in the middle of an episode and said like, hey, what's going on here? It would take you like 5 minutes and you might have a hard time like actually explaining everything that's going on. But when you get it and you know everything and all the pieces are moving and you know totally... You understand completely the battleground and all the players and what's going to happen next and why what's happening is dramatic. It's satisfying. It's a satisfying experience. It's like a full meal.
So
you have to pay attention and you have to like follow it and engage with it on its own terms at least a little bit in order to get what's going on. And I find that to be a satisfying experience.
Okay, so it's funny that you use that word, because before we were about to do the podcast, I was thinking to myself, like, how do I sum this up? And I was like, of the, not, certainly not of anything I've watched ever, like, definitely not, it's far from, like, even close to the worst thing I've seen or anything like that, or the most boring thing I've seen, anything like that, but of the stuff that we have done for series, discussion, and casts, I have never felt more unsatisfied and time wasted than I did watching all of Gundam Wing.
All right.
I would recommend this to people who grew up with it and want to revisit it and, like, put it back into context. I would recommend you watch it. I would recommend it for Gundam completionists in order to, like, compare it to other stuff. And I've only dabbled in Gundam 2. This is only the fourth Gundam thing I've seen. And I want to watch the Universal Century Trilogy movies. Like, I got a little bit into that and then didn't finish it. But of stuff that I've finished, this is only the fourth. The others were Iron-Blooded Orphans, 8th MS Team, and War in the Pocket. I liked War in the Pocket a lot. I could say some good things about the other two. I don't have a kind word for Gundam Wing, except that it made me laugh really hard when it reached its worst stage, and Relena deserved a better show. But if you're not trying to get into Gundam and you didn't grow up with it, I don't think there's any point to trying to sit through this. It is incredibly boring, makes no sense, and there's no character development, like, at all.
To you.
There really isn't.
In your opinion.
In my opinion, which is based on sitting through 49 episodes of this thing to talk about.
So is mine.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I'm going, if I sit,
you're just through, saying you're right.
No, I'm saying if I sit through 49 episodes of a thing that I don't like, I sure as shit am going to be honest about how much I didn't like it.
No, that you're
I think it's interesting that the shows you did like were either very modern or very short. So it was Gundam storytelling, but yeah, even 8th MS Team is shorter than usual.
Well, see, I like it.
They were restrained to what progressed the plot instead of all kinds of things all over the place.
Yeah, I should clarify. I didn't actually like Iron-Blooded Orphans. I didn't think it was very good. I didn't have a lot of fondness for it, but I can say many good things about it. Like, I could say, oh, that element was good. That episode was good. That was interesting to me. I remember that. That was a strong bit of writing, even though I thought the overall package was kind of a mess. But I can't say that about, like, moments in Gundam Wing. The stuff that I like about it is stuff that's bad. So, you know, except for Relena. But even then, like, the whole pacifist thing just kind of undercut her as a character. It was like, the straw man thing made it so she couldn't really be a complete character. She'd just be like the closest thing to a cool badass in the show. I don't know.
That was one thing that bugged me, was all the straw man political arguments, because it really feels like a waste of time. Like, this isn't relevant to anybody or anything. It's like specious. It's like a specious political argument. You're arguing about scenarios that don't happen, and like, it just isn't in human nature, and like, there's no instance of it in history or whatever. It's just like, I think humans are this way. Well, I think they're this way. And you're like, this is just like fucking I'm stoned and it's late and talking about humans. Yeah. You know, like, that's what it felt like for a lot of the political stuff. It's just total straw man nonsense.
But I need to revisit 8th MS Team, and I want to watch the trilogy, because the original Universal.
I think you'll love 8th MS Team. Based on the reasons you don't like Gundam Wing.
Well, I remember liking it. Grounded. I remember liking it, but I was like 15, 16, so, well, I need to revisit it.
You know, just point this out. Back in the day, 8th MS Team was largely considered to be the antidote to Wing to begin with.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That was how it was perceived by the old-timers in my anime club. That's how they acted. They were like, well, it doesn't have these fucking pretty boys in it, and it's about war.
Yeah, it's not fantasy. It's very real. The robots look real. The warfare feels like it could just be a documentary.
That's interesting. Well, I'll definitely go back, and I enjoyed it. I remember my mental comparison for it at the time I watched it was, it's like MASH, so I'll see if that's similar to how I feel about it now. But and War in the Pocket is great, and everybody should watch War in the Pocket. It's really good.
Absolutely.
You know what they should also watch? Mobile Suit Gundam Wing.
No!
Yeah!
It really depends.
Get your friends together, get a bunch of fucking beers, watch some Gundam Wing. You're gonna laugh yourself silly.
You can feel your soul leaving your body. It's a great time.
Everything! Do we not get this? Like, I guess that's the thing. Like, Jake wasn't there for that. Jake wasn't on the train when it started, you know? Where it was like, holy crap, we're getting the same stuff that people are seeing in Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, like, in Sailor Moon, they were cousins, and, just a lot of things. You couldn't always guarantee what you were getting was what was really coming from Japan. But here, we were just seeing the same episodes with very little editing to the source material. I mean, yeah, they changed death to destroy and they got rid of the blood. But that was because I watched it during the day with the other kids. But I mean, this was everyone's introduction to Gundam in the United States. It broke so much ground. It created a generation of Gundam fans.
Yeah. And I definitely don't want to diminish any of that, by the way, by saying that it's bad.
I just wanted to, add a supplement to that. Like, today, I wouldn't recommend it to new fans. If I had to recommend a Gundam show to people who are like, I've never seen a Gundam show, what should I watch? Gundam Wing would not be the first thing that comes to mind.
Me neither. I wouldn't say that either.
but that's what it was for me. And it's interesting to know that there's a whole generation of people that Gundam Wing was their intro to Gundam. But that doesn't mean it's the best one.
Watching it now, it is fucking weird that this was so big.
Yeah,
it is weird.
There's things that are constantly like if you're a kid and you don't want it to like slow down and not hold your attention or have to think about stuff, like that show is just always going. It's the keys are always jangling. The robots are always firing. Like the show never stops. So even if you're like, this is too grown up for me to understand, but like I understand that this is consistently entertaining, then yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah. What, just out of curiosity, Lauren, what Gundam would you recommend to newbies?
For newbies. I actually wrote this down because I think this was one of the questions we got. No, one of the questions we got on Twitter was like, what should people watch after they watch Gundam Wing?
We'll get to those Twitter questions, but I was just curious if you had an off-the-top answer for like, new Gundam fan, watch this.
I mean, I guess I tell them to watch the trilogy movies.
That's what I tell them. Okay, I wasn't totally, because I was like, should I not tell people that? Because they are like old, but that's why I like them. One of the reasons I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're old.
But since they're movies, they go quickly.
Yeah,
so
and you really will
old,
understand.
The thing isn't
sorry, go
old.
Ahead. Sorry, say that again.
Because they're movies, they've been condensed, they go quickly. Even though they are old and they look old, the pacing isn't old.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like if you watch that, it's the key to Gundam. Like if you watch original Gundam, you will understand a lot of the later series. Like,
yeah, because they're always harking back to
yeah.
it.
You know? Well, and just in plot and in like character and stuff, like you were saying, like a lot of the stuff in this show where you're like, why are they doing this? And
yeah,
it's because
it's a flow
repeating,
chart where you start with someone yeah. does something that makes no sense.
The only thing is that that's
two yeah. ways. One is this their motivation? No. And then the other way goes, has this been done in Gundam before? And if that's yes, then you get why it was done.
Yeah, it's right. just the thing is that that's not a reason. Like, that's not, like, a valid, like, you might, that's such a weird narrative reason for anything to happen. You've seen it in another Gundam show, we think. So this is what's going to happen.
Star Wars works. Like, oh, I recognize that.
Yeah, that's how franchising works. They do it for Star Wars. They do it for anything that's long running.
Okay,
like,
but they usually try to make the stuff make sense in the plot and not
good.
just hard right turn into this thing that we have to get in here for some reason.
Yeah, if like, it's good, but Gundam Wing is bad,
Gundam
so they
Wing
don't.
Gundam Wing will just have nonsensical plot stuff happen, and the reason that it's happening is this has happened in Gundam before, like that.
Because people liked Char's counterattack, so let's end it this way. That's what she's saying. Like it's
fuck that. Like
that's just franchise fatigue. Like. Yeah,
I get it. I guess I sound totally.
No, there's definitely
do I sound really
here.
Confused?
I remember.
I'm just talking
I just
about
found
it.
A quote from the producer who was like, "Humans were not designed to create Gundam shows."
What?
That sounds like an extremely apropos quote. With that, I feel like we should take some Twitter questions. We got plenty of them. Okay. All right. Ready for these Twitter questions? Let's
yeah.
see here. Exidor DE asks, best of the show from Sunrise's Year of the Fujoshi. I guess that was 96?
95. Because that was the year for Gundam.
Dagwon, Chojurei Dean, or Galkiba. Yeah, I guess Sunrise had a bunch of lady-oriented Gundam show or mecha shows out in 95. I have not seen any of those other ones.
Me neither.
Neither have I.
All right. My anime waifu asks, could each of you do your best impression of the English dub version of General Septim? So, in case people don't know, Gundam Wing is an old ocean dub, which means it has an ocean dub from the 90s, which means it has characters that sound like this in it.
Your point being?
You wasted 3 mobile suits just to bring a minor rebellion under control?
And as a result, we were able to prevent the rebellion from developing into anything.
I'm not talking about the results! You're abusing the Alliance military's valuable combat resources!
There's more.
Valuable combat resources? Are you talking about our soldiers, or are you talking about mobile suits?
Are you making fun of me, dammit?
I think he has a deviated septum.
I can't really, like, you have to really...
You're taking advantage of the military's valuable resources!
Oh! That's pretty good, Jacob. Now that I've fucked up my throat.
Anyway.
Lauren, do you have a general septum impression that you bust out for your friends on weekends?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Okay. A toasty sub asks, if you could copy the wardrobe of any character in the show, whose would it be? Jacob,
yeah,
I'm going to say you're...
Relena.
Well, okay, Lauren, you would pick Relena. Jacob?
Specifically what Duo wears and his hair. I'll take his hair also, but I'll what Duo wears in Endless Waltz.
I was going to say, you seem like a Hero Yui sort to me.
Ugh, no.
Who gives a fuck tank top? That is Jacob Chapman.
No, I want a tank top that fits me nice and has a good design on it.
Well,
I'm
it's
not gonna
the
wear
90s, though.
Fucking oh, well, if I was in the 90s...
If it was the 90s, you'd be wearing that tank top.
No, but me as I am right now, I would wear what Duo wears in Endless Waltz.
So like the red turtleneck with the zipper?
Maybe not that. I stake my claim, the leather jacket he wears in Endless Waltz, and his hair is good too.
Man, I don't know. They're all like turtleneck and jeans kind of guys. Like, that's Troa, like turtleneck and jeans.
And no one has a butt. Have you noticed that?
There's no butts on anybody. It's just flat.
Just flat butt. They're ripped on
You're
top and there's
Ketra.
No ass.
I keep saying Quatre. But it's
Quatre.
I say Ketra, but
Ketra. Whatever.
There's not really rules for these things.
He's like a little. I guess I would look okay in like a white shirt, rolled up sleeves. That'd be fine. I guess Ketra. I guess I go with him. I guess I go with that guy.
Vest.
I'm not taking any of your fucking like neo fascist outfits or anything, any of that shit. So I gotta pick one of the boys. It's not gonna be Wu Fei. All right.
Relena looks fucking bomb in the like was it like corporal uniform she wears with the low ponytail.
Yeah, all of her outfits
are
really good.
There's a figure of that that's really good.
It's really good. Anyway,
Cyber Mormon asks, which Gundam most makes you want to say "God damn"? Which is your favorite Gundam model? Duos. That's the best one. IMO. It's that and the Wings Arrow with the wings.
Yeah, not only do we all think that, but that's the most popular Gunpla that they sell in the U.S. even today. When I interviewed Xavier Lin of Bluefin for Anime News Network, ever heard of it?
I should go read
he
that.
He said that.
Really? Wing Zero is their number one?
No, Death Scythe Hell.
Death Scythe
Wing
Hell,
Wing Zero
really?
And Heavy Arms. Sorry, Wing Zero Custom and Heavy Arms Custom from Endless Waltz are the other two big sellers.
That's,
even now, that's or at least amazing. Even in 2016.
That's amazing.
Cool. Yeah, Death Scythe looks the nicest.
Yeah, it's a cool design. He just has a cool weapon, too. All right. Final Fury K, now here's the question. How much of a jam are all the 2-mix songs? Are they still jams?
They're charming.
I mean, yeah, the music's fantastic. It's still great.
I think the score, the soundtrack for the show is great.
Yeah, I love that it's a Gundam song. Like, do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It's punchy. It's great for the show and it's great for the time. The theme songs, they're charming. I don't know that I would say that they're great pop music. I think they've dated very poorly. But they're charming and they're dated. Like I find them cute.
Jeez, those are on my running list.
Yeah, they're definitely not like bad because it's like, oh, this is fun and cute to listen to. But I'm not impressed either. I guess you could say.
Yeah, you don't have the nostalgia. It's really hard to tell if I love something because it's great or because I'm like, oh, I remember this.
Oh, totally. And since I didn't grow up with it, like I don't have that angle. So, but like, if I did, I guarantee you because Outlaw Star's opening is objectively a dumb song, but I love it. So you know,
I also have the nostalgia for that. So that's not a good comparison.
Yeah. Well, it's yeah. They're both like really weird, dated songs that are performed kind of iffy, but like. The nostalgia's there, and I still think it's a really charming
day of the week. Yeah,
2-mix, right? Here's a hot take: I think the second one is underappreciated.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
The second opening, mm-hmm. I feel like people make a big fucking deal about just communication,
rhythm of motion.
Yeah, and I think Rhythm of Motion is underappreciated.
Yeah, I would say they're about equal.
Well, the thing is, I think Rhythm of Motion is actually a little bit better song. Like, I like it a little more. It's just a personal thing.
I didn't listen to it that much, so because I had to, you know, start skipping stuff in order to finish on time. But, like, yeah, it's my first listen, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, this is about on par with the first one. So it would be interesting to compare them. Everybody remembers Communication because, like, this begins with four English words. So, you know, you can sing along.
That song was...
Well, I just feel Rhythm Emotion is also English.
Yeah, it is.
But is it the first four words?
It's also, but Rhythm Emotion is only the last like 10 episodes or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
still great.
It's just not there as often.
Yeah.
Zinky asks, is Wing your default recommendation for people who haven't ventured out of the UC canon? So that's an interesting question. This is not a Universal Century show, which means it doesn't take place in the same timeline as Amuro Ray and Char Asnet.
This is after Colony.
Yeah.
It is the only after Colony universe show.
Yeah, this is entirely its own thing. So when you recommend it to people, there isn't, I mean, which is super fucking weird, because was the intention behind that, like, Lauren, do you know why it's like that?
Well, actually, the first out of universe one was G Gundam.
Well, sure, right.
So this wasn't completely breaking. It's just
the decision was made.
They were running out of like Universal Century ideas, and they're like, what about some exploring some stuff that completely diverges from this idea of new types, though of course we still get some kind of version of new types.
Yeah, we just choose not to explain it at all. Like, that's weird. They didn't come up with a different like concept. They just did new types and then didn't explain it. That kind of that's what it feels like, right? I mean, Hero acts like a new type, has like powers, people are psychic sometimes, but they never say anyone's a new type.
I never got the impression that they were distinctly superhuman. I thought they were just really well-trained soldiers, and that the AI of their Gundam merged with them like on occasion in ways that they explained was part of the technology. The scientists say that's part of the technology, so...
Well, we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
Right?
So I didn't think
and
that
Lauren
he...
said that it was a fan thing, like people think maybe he is or something like that, and it feels right. Like it in the show, so that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, he feels really special, but I'm not sure that was the intent. I think it's just... You know, maybe it's one of those things, like you were saying, like that like sort of a franchise carryover, where like this is just the way it has to be. But we didn't explain it in universe. Well, he just has to be special, so he's just this way, and they don't explain it. But he's
actually the original question. Like, everything is out of universe now,
right?
Like Seed and Sea Destiny are their own universe, and 00 and Orphans. Just, I think they just were like, well, where do we go from here with the universal timeline? And really just started venturing out to explore different things. Though you're right, like Wing is very similar. And even calling it after Colony, there's so many space colonies in different universes. Also one of the more interesting ones, I guess, would be my answer to the question, would be After War Gundam X. It's the post-apocalyptic Gundam universe.
Yeah, right.
Like, the war already happened.
Right. Okay. Bunny Cartoon asks, who is each host's best boy from Gundam Wing? Favorite character?
Oh, Duo.
Duo.
Troa. Fuck you guys.
I mean, like, so I would say none of them, because, like, I didn't attach
Troa is hilarious.
Yeah. But
start to love Duo so much more if you watch like if you read like the prequel manga and stuff. Like, the priest tells Duo like miracles are a thing. He's like, I've never seen a miracle, but I've seen so many dead people. I love
Jesus.
That line.
Now, yeah, like when I say Duo, I mean purely on his surface personality. Like, he seems like the nicest person to get along with, but like he doesn't have like an interesting arc or whatever. Like, none of these characters I have any kind of deep affinity for. It's just like, on first glance, Duo's like, yep, yeah, seems like a nice feller.
Hey, this guy just died. Well, I need a name.
That's Troa.
Troa's backstory.
Yeah. Troa is responsible for the most accidental comedy. So there you go.
Well, that's why he's the best.
All right. Speaking
of which,
one good point.
CC Takato asks, are Troa and Quatre the first canon gay couple in a Gundam anime? No, because they're not canon gay at all.
They're not canon.
That's not remotely canon. Canon means
the first
actually
canon
in the story.
Gay couple we only just had. I mean, that would count as canon, and that would be in Orphans.
Right. Yeah, and it wasn't a couple, it was unrequited.
Yeah, it was more like this person is gay. We're going to say that. But
and then we're going to kill him 15 minutes later.
And, I mean, some people listening to this will be like, no, 00 had the first canon gay couple. No, it didn't. I mean,
I'm not familiar.
Why was there so much official homoerotic art of Hero and Duo?
Okay, I Googled this. I mean, I actually researched this.
Official?
Like, yeah, official. Official.
That, no, well, my answer to that was because they figured out the ladies were thirsty and they like money. So they did that. Like, duh. Or is that not... Is there no official... Like, he's saying official homoerotic art.
Yeah, there's tons of official art pairing them.
Yeah, I'm sure... Yeah, I saw it. It's like pencil boards and stuff where they're, like, touching each other's chests and shit, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's really two prongs here. Like, you can kind of see why Gundam shows try so hard to appeal to women, even going to have these five pretty boys. In something that Tomino said... where he said that the first fans of the original Gundam were young women, definitely not Gunpla enthusiasts. Most of the 90% of the first fans were girls. When male fans started to make an uproar, I was like, you're late to the party. The series was getting canceled around then. So Tomino has always been interested in that, but of course he wasn't on this show. It's just that Gundam has this history of appealing to women. Uh-huh. So then I went to 80s anime. I think she goes by Kodazat on Twitter now. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if there's any official statements on why there is a bunch of homoerotic art. And she said, no, but it's capitalizing on the trend of pretty boy teams popularized by stuff like Samurai Troopers. And this... fuel the doujinshi boom. Okay, so no, we don't really know.
Well, I mean, those are market forces at the time. That's that. Mm-hmm. Like the answer to that is market forces at the time dictated that this is what they needed to make, and it became very obvious that was one of the major appeals of the show, and so they started like that happens with a lot of anime. Like Gundam Wing is not the only show to have that like happen, where they put out stuff where it's like, oh, these two characters might be into each other just in like key art or whatever. Like that's not a new thing
today.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't new then either. Mm-hmm. They did that too back then. So let's see here. Vince A asks, why is the sometimes confusing mass of pretty boys so popular?
It was the first. We didn't know any better. This was amazing. Yeah. If you've never seen any Gundam, this is the best Gundam.
If you see this kind of bombast in 1997 or whenever it was on, I think it was 2000 it was on.
It was 2000.
You see this kind of bombast on TV in 2000, and the only thing before that, you know, like, the first thing you're exposed to is Gundam Wing. Mm-hmm. It's going to blow your fucking mind if you're not familiar with anime, like, really at all.
He's like, look at this cute 15-year-old.
Gundam
like,
Wing is going to be like, what is this? Yeah. Holy shit.
It's so different than anything on TV at the time.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's just hard to understand just how different and not like anything else it was. I mean, now we are able to be choosy because of Gundam Wing, that aired on Toonami back then.
Like, watching it now, it's like, it is ridiculous, like, how little these boys, like, even interact with one another. Like, it's kind of a team of five lone wolves for the most part that kind of come together every now and again. But, like... it's unbelievable. Like they're pretty and they wear nice clothes and they for the time and they occasionally speak to one another, and that was enough. That it was like, what are these feelings for a lot of women? You know, it's like, wow.
Turtle Shell 813 says, for narratives like this, do you think there's a hypocritical irony that it preaches war is bad when all of its revenue and viewership banks on boys enjoying and watching destruction and mayhem? No, because the show is not arguing for total pacifism. It just presents that as a political view and then kind of argues with it for a while. And I think that pretending that a show is, like, unless it is explicitly claiming, do not do this, and then profits from that thing, I think you need to be a little careful throwing around, isn't this hypocritical? Because you can do that, and you can make really specious comparisons. Kind of like I think this one is, you know, no offense. I think it's fairly specious to claim that it's hypocritical because it's preaching. Like, that's certainly not what Gundam Wing is doing. It is discussing peace, however. It's attempting to discuss it. Tom Tivikit asks, how does Trace compare to other Gundam villains?
Trace in particular, huh?
It's hard to, like...
How does he compare to Char's, maybe?
I only think about
Char's. Zex is the one I'd compare to Char.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh, I kept, you know what? I got them mixed up because my brain has turned to pudding after like 2 hours of...
I didn't think he was particularly memorable or good, to be honest. Trayze was an uninteresting character to me, and I thought his motivation was really stupid. And like,
if I had to compare him, I'd compare him to Mashemeyer Cello. That's a real name of a real Gundam person, mm-hmm. who was kind of like a weird dandy and also a bad guy in Double Zeta. But kinda like, only because they're like, we're rich and evil, you know?
Yeah, well, at first I thought he was setting Trayze up as, like, the propaganda authoritarian. Here's the person who dominates with propaganda. This is a person whose backroom dealings and, you know, savvy PR help him take over the country first without too much violence. I thought that's kind of where they were going with it, but then it turned into, no, I'm actually obsessed with humanism for some reason. Like, it's just weird. Yeah. I didn't really care for Trayze. X was... At least I laughed every time he's like, but these people aren't behaving chivalrously. Yeah, no shit, man. Are my ideas so out of touch? That's what he said every time.
Yeah.
What do you think Gundam Wing would have been like if it were written and directed by Mr. Yoshiyuki? Tell me now, asks Bebop Shock. Well, I'm sure it would be stranger. Stranger still. I don't know. What do you think, Lauren?
I think he would have just stuck it in the Universal Century and gone, like, doubled down on new types.
You think so?
I don't think he would have put it in a different universe.
Yeah. Would have just been more of the same. Yeah, probably. And that's, and it, like, I don't think it would have had the kind of impact it did. I think it would have been too, you know, tied to other shit. Even though it weirdly is. Like, it weirdly is tied to all that other shit in a really fundamental way. But it's like not directly in a story sense. Like, you don't need to know who Char is to watch this show.
Yeah, but it helps.
But it really helps.
That's what they're pigeonholing Zex into.
Well, but that's such a weird thing, right? Because you tell somebody like, oh yeah, this one's not connected to all the other shows. Because I guess it's not. It's in its own universe. It's self-contained, right? But you do need to have seen other Gundam to really make sense of it. VFS55 asks, do you think the show's success with women and girls is the main cause of the backlash it received from older Gundam fans? Yes.
God, I was like 12. I didn't know any older Gundam fans.
Well, I did, and I saw it firsthand. And they were upset because girls were in their treehouse. Mm-hmm. That's why. Assigning it some more complicated reason than that is not necessary. Because the answer was extremely obvious, and they stated it over and over again. It's not a girl's show. Gundam's not supposed to be a girl's show. Mm-hmm. It was fucking dumb.
Well, and it wasn't just the older either, because I wasn't familiar with older Gundam fans at that time, but I was familiar with all of my guy gamer friends and anime fan friends in middle school, and they actually weren't into the kind – I didn't get into anime as I did later in high school, because the only kind of anime that they liked was like – the really crusty stuff like Gundam and Dragon Ball Z. But like, either way, they were not happy about girls liking Gundam Wing. They were like, this is our thing. We like this. And like, we like Dragon Ball and like, we like Akira and stuff like that. And they did not like how female the fan base for Gundam Wing was. And they were very vocal about that. These are the like 14-year-old boys.
Like, so. I didn't even know that boys liked it until I got to college. I was so shocked when I met my husband in college. I'm like, wait, you have all the Gundam Wing tapes?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a boys show.
That's funny. Yeah, my perception of the fandom was that it was 50-50, but maybe it was 60-40,
I'd say it's 50-50. I mean, okay. In order to become such a hit as it was, like, in order to get those ratings in America, it must have had to be pretty split.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know the exact demographics. The other McAfee asks, in an interview with Nozomi, Wing director Masashi Ikeda said that Wing began to malfunction narratively after a certain point, but precisely where was redacted by the interviewer.
You mean where he got fired?
Yeah, I think it's probably where he got fired. I don't think it functions from the get-go. Like, narratively, this thing is an over-the-top, bombastic, crazy mess right away, and it's hard to follow. I don't think it ever is like, wow, this is well-written. I never thought that. It's always a mess. Like, the idea that it only starts to malfunction after a certain point, it's malfunctioning right away. And it kind of maintains that same level of, like, what? The whole way through. So, yeah, I guess, like, at some point it really starts falling apart, but it really felt like those last 10 episodes were really where it started, like, okay, this could have wrapped up 10 episodes. Y'all are, like, repeating plot points at this point, just with different factions in place. Like, yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Lauren?
I mean, that's what I said. Like, if I were writing an essay and then somebody else finished the essay, I'd be like, yeah, it fell apart around paragraph three. But yeah. I was let go.
Let's see here. Agent 79 asks, Endless Waltz fills in so much backstory and plot that was strangely missing from the TV series, like what Operation Meteor is and how it went wrong. And I'm curious whether y'all appreciated finally learning more about these things or if it was too little too late. Well, I think we know Jacob's answer.
I had zero brain cells by the time I was watching that movie. So, like, no, I picked up some of that stuff, but no, it didn't improve the experience, and I don't think it would have helped, because I didn't, like, because none of it made the characters more sympathetic or, like, their motivations more real, so no, that didn't help. More plot in a show that has too much plot, surprisingly, didn't help at all.
Lauren?
I mean, I loved it. I remember getting together with my friends when we knew that Endless Waltz was going to air. We kind of made a party out of it, and it was like, oh, there's even more! And we like the new outfits. Okay, it's pretty surface level here.
Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's totally fine.
That's not invalid. That's totally valid. Okay. Nos Anime asks, fans who got into Gundam through Wing as children had trouble following the politics. You don't say. What does it say about Wing as a series it had such Byzantine elements of the plot could go over the heads of the intended audience and still be popular? Also, favorite grunt suit. I don't have one of those. Lauren, do you have a favorite grunt suit?
Oh, yeah, the Cancer. It's a crab and it's underwater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great.
I love aqua suits.
I love the bit where I laughed really hard when Zex picks up the crab and splits it in half. Like, yeah, you get that crab meat. It's delicious crab meat.
Yeah. Oz stands for something like Organization of Zodiacs. So I'm sad there's not a Sagittarius, because that's my sign. Mm. That's what I would have said if there were.
Is there a Scorpio?
Yeah, there's a Scorpio.
Maybe I missed it.
There's so much happening.
Well, it might not be in the show. It might be like in one of the prequels or sequels or Frozen.
Or maybe it's in the show and I just
there's
fucking...
There's totally a Scorpio.
Yeah, I didn't memorize Gundam Wing. I just watched it.
They maybe they like tried to build Sagittarius and they're like, okay, this thing is shaped too weird to function.
Yeah,
like,
what?
It's centaur-shaped mech and they can't get it to, like, you know, move properly, ambulate.
Isn't Sagittarius like the hourglass?
No, Sagittarius
it's a
centaur.
With the bow and arrow. That would have been a great Gundam.
At least it's an actual, like it's not an inanimate object.
Yeah, I would hate to get Libra. Although I have Gemini, which is, like, kind
of
lame.
I mean, Libra is one of the suits, so...
Yeah.
Isn't Libra the giant fuck-off space station?
Oh, yeah, it's the cannon. Sorry, yeah. It's the cannon. And then Ares
also, why didn't they fucking kill those engineers? Because they just keep getting captured and then build whatever death machine the bad guys want them to build. And then they're like, well, sorry about that. And it happens, like, three times, I think.
Why didn't they kill anybody in this show? It's about war. I need to see some fucking sacrifice, damn it.
What does it say about Wing as a series? It says that most of the episode is action. And it's crazy shit happening constantly. It's propulsive. You may not understand it, but if you're only watching it 22 minutes a week, you're there for the action if you're a kid. You're watching robots blow each other up. They do not scrimp on robots blowing each other up. They do not scrimp on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always something happening. And there's always something to talk about the next day at school.
And everything that happens is usually a reason for a fight to break out. So that's why. Also from Turtle Shell... In regards to war narratives, Steven Spielberg declared that every war movie, good or bad, is anti-war, while François Truffaut claimed there's no such thing as an anti-war film. Does this apply to Gundam? You know, I'm a little bit more of a Truffaut guy on that part. Spielberg is believing a little bit too much in the good nature of human beings, I think. Gundam definitely takes a perspective on this. The guy earlier was talking about this, like, isn't it hypocritical? Gundam is a conversation about this stuff. At least it's trying to have a conversation about this stuff. And it's also trying to sell robots.
Gundam has always been war is bad, but also cool.
But also inevitable. But also, should we allow that to dictate our destinies as people? Are we actually just destined to murder each other or not?
In terms of
do we
media,
have a higher nature? All that stuff.
In terms of media contributing to the trivialization of war, I don't think that Gundam really has any blood on its hands in that regard, because it's a show that discusses like how hard, even when it fails, like I would say it does in Wing, like it's a show that discusses how hard it is to like make it through war, and like basically the costs of war and the philosophies of war. Basically, it doesn't make war seem fun. It does make war seem like, you know, a little laborious. And the things that it's selling are not tanks, they're not guns, they're not representative of real world weapons. They are big old robots. So I don't think that Gundam has a whole lot of, that hasn't really thing anything to be ashamed of, like maybe Transformers might have a little bit to be ashamed of. I don't think Gundam is in the same class.
All right.
I specifically mean the Bayformers, not like the old 80s cartoon, but like the movies.
Okay, Chuodori asks, production-wise, how well or poorly does Gundam Wing fare compared to later Gundam series? Lauren, what do you think?
Oh, I mean, in the 90s, it's really bad, but I'm just really happy with the box set because this is the best it's ever looked. I really like the Blu-ray transfer. I think it's really crisp. I don't know how they did it. I figured it'd be blurry.
I actually think the show looks great for a 90s show. I think it's perfectly well animated for a show from that era. Yeah. Like, it's a good example of anime from the late 90s, I think, from mid-90s. Like, it looks at least as good as, like, a lot of its contemporaries at the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't look as good as a modern Gundam, but it looks good to me.
Yeah.
What's that, Lauren?
I started to interrupt you, but I saw that you were saying that you really liked the character designs.
I do. Do you not?
Oh, no, I do. I just wanted you to elaborate.
Oh, yeah. No, I really like that guy, Shuka Murase. He's got a really distinctive style a lot of people bit from, and a lot of people have a similar style, but he kind of originated it. He did the character designs. Like, you look at the cover of, like, Street Fighter II, the animated movie, or, like, the Darkstalkers OVA, you see that it's right away. He has this, like, giant thumbprint. You can just see it from a mile away, and it's a real distinctive and atmospheric and almost nostalgic look to it. I also just like the solidity of his designs. He draws a solid face. I like that. It's almost like a refinement. I would even suggest a perfection of the Kiya Asamiya style with a big chin and the small face. I feel like he expanded the proportions on both of those to a more pleasant and realistic look that I really like. I think he's a very talented guy. He directed the film Genocidal Organ. Not his character designs, but he is still very much an active presence, Shuka Murase.
Yeah, and he basically dictated, like, after working with Watanabe, he basically dictated the look and feel of Madhouse, which is unfortunate because Madhouse couldn't bring his style of animation or his style of character designs, like, to life on a TV budget most of the time, which is really another tribute to Gundam Wing in that those aren't the easiest characters in the world to draw, and they're very distinctive, and the show looks pretty good throughout, so.
Yeah. Totally. Let's see. Also, for Lauren, I want you to take this one. Where would you rank, from Dystopian Smile, where would you rank this storyline on the Gundam plot incoherency scale? 0 is Gundam Reconquista in G, to 10, Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Oh, shit. I made a big mistake. Let me just correct that. I said Madhouse. I meant Manglobe. Huge difference. Manglobe, not Madhouse. My bad. Anyway, sorry.
Good to know. Iron-Blooded Orphans is 10?
Like, the most coherent, I think.
Is the most coherent. Well, I guess because it's so modern. But, you know, Reconquista in G is also quite modern.
But he's saying it doesn't make any sense at all.
That's absolutely true.
Where would you put Gundam Wing between those two?
I guess I'd give it around a 3.
Closer to the 0, huh?
Yeah, it's hard to tell what's going on.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I'm trying to mentally fill in where everything else would go.
You're like, now I'm filling out a, hey, do you want to,
30
that's a
Gundam
feature.
Titles.
No, wait, that's a great feature. The most coherent to least coherent.
I'm on it.
The Gundam coherency.
Coherency.
The Gundam plot coherency scale. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Is there any significance to the characters having foreign language numbers for names? Lauren, do you know?
It's just listed as kind of a fun fact. Like, everyone's a number.
Did you know that? Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I guess I could make up something. Like, it just shows that our humanity doesn't really matter. We're really just replaceable numbers.
In different languages.
Okay. Let's see here. We got a lot of these questions. A lot of them are still just stuff we've already talked about. Let me just get to the meaty ones here so we can wrap up. Here's a good question. Boneheimer asks, why would Lady Un shoot a man before throwing him out of a plane? I don't fucking know. Why did she do anything that she did? Her plans were the fucking worst. She had the worst plans next to Relena. Lady Un had the worst plans.
Well, the guy that she threw out was General Septim, that she shot and then threw out of a plane was General Septim. So she didn't want to hear his horrible voice as he fell through the air. So she shot him first. That's the answer to your question.
What?
Okay, how many times are we going to listen to this?
A lot. Let's see here. Moving on. Rising Zeit Type Zero asks, why are you doing this to yourselves? Feels like a really good question for this late in the show.
Yeah.
Custom Zaku asks, does the admitted narrative sloppiness detract from the fact that it worked as an effective primer to a lot of the ideas and contents of Gundam for a U.S. audience? Lauren, what's your take on that?
I mean, he's not wrong. It includes a lot of the concepts that you see again and again in Gundam, but it's not the first time for most of them. It is the first time we see, like, a bunch of different pilots working together, because then we can sell more kits that way. But in a lot of ways, there's not a lot that's original to that. I like to see it as a different way that the same old Gundam tropes are portrayed and given new life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good... it's like mulch. You know, it's like... the soil just turns over and you get new life out of it over and over again, but it's kind of the same basic elements, you know?
Yeah, like we're going to drop a colony. What's going to happen this time? Is it actually going to drop or no?
So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on and going through this entire show with us. I cannot thank you enough. It was an extreme pleasure having you here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I feel like 18 years just flashed before my eyes.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyway, that does it for us, everyone. Thanks a lot for hanging out. We'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Lauren for stopping by and enduring all of that with us. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, you know, all that stuff. Leave us comments and reviews and ratings. We really appreciate it. It helps us a lot. Thanks, and we'll see you all next week.